as they fall from your open hand. At the call of the wind's command, many words are spoken when there's nothing to say. They fall upon the ears of those who don't know the way. You read between the lines that lead between the lines that lead me to you.
Everybody, welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, February 20th, 2017. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening over another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call in number is 712-770-4160. Our participant code is 385-698. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support National Liberty Alliance effort to save America. Also, please support National Liberty Alliance by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab up on the top right. And, you know, right now we really do need some money. We're just not making enough money coming in to pay the bills, and so it's really been difficult the last couple of months. So, look, and anybody who's not given $5 a month or more, please consider that, because we need the support. Also, we got a lot of court cases going on. We're going to be extremely busy, and there's going to be a lot of mailing going on. A lot of these things have to be certified, and that costs more money. And, of course, there's paper and toner and so on and so on and so on. So please support our effort. Okay, let's see. Tonight's scripture reading is going to be out of the Gospel of John. We're looking at chapter 15, verses 1 through 17. It's the Gospel of John, chapter 15, 1 through 17, the vine and the branches. I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, no more can ye, except ye abide in me. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing. If a man abideth not in me, he is cast forth as a branch, and is withered, and men gather them, and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. So shall ye be my disciples. As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. If ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments, and abide in his love. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if ye do whatever soever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servants knoweth not what his Lord doeth. But I have called you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father have I made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you, and ordained you, that ye should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, and whatsoever ye shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it to you. These things I command you, that ye love one another. Okay, that was the Gospel of John, chapter 15, verses 1 through 17. Okay, let's see. We had a meeting earlier this evening at 8 o'clock. This was our second board meeting. We're trying to pull all the leadership together to come to a board meeting. We want to keep that short. And everyone is invited to come to this meeting. Hopefully, if you're going to come to the meeting, you're going to participate as some kind of a leader. We have lots of leadership roles that need to be fulfilled. We have lots of leaders that have taken positions over the years. Some people kind of maybe fallen asleep, and it's time to rejuvenate them and to bring them back into the fold, so to speak, get them reactivated. But everyone that can give at least an hour a week or more, needs to give an hour a week or more. You got to get involved. We got committees, we got leaderships on many different levels, which I'm going to go through in a minute. And so we need as many people as possible that can participate with us. Let me open up my sheet here. Okay, we have national coordinators, and we could always use more national coordinators. Anybody who would like to be a national coordinator and really get involved, they have to be someone who's willing to put in a lot of time at that point. All of our national coordinators are pretty much almost full-time, or close to it anyway. They put a lot of time in it, and they're involved with a lot of projects, and it's got to be. So anybody that would like to get involved, one of the qualifications or requirements are that you take our courses, be at least involved in them, and coming to our Monday night meetings, and learning. That's the prerequisite. Nothing more than that. That's it. And of course, have the time to give us. We need district leaders. We've got a bunch of district leaders. We're going to try to reactivate them, but we can always use more. Each position we're trying to fill, we want a partnership with others, so we want to put two people into every position so that if an individual can't make it to a particular meeting, you make sure you get a hold of your partner, so to speak, and make sure that someone gets there so that they can bring the news back to the others to keep everyone abreast to what's going on. all of these people in these leadership roles should be working with other people. But the leadership roles need to be coming to this Monday night meeting, which we will be holding every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here in this room. Purposely chose it for that time and that day so that we don't go over time, because we have this program that starts at 9 o'clock. So I'd like to keep that meeting down to a half hour, 45 minutes max, get a 10-15 minute break in between, and then start the Monday night call. And basically the purpose of the meeting is for the right hand to know what the left hand is doing. People reporting, and then people needing more information, that we can kind of schedule something. Well, okay, this group needs more instruction in this area, or it needs more information on that area. You know, maybe it could be just ask a question on a Monday night program. We can give you the information. But if it's something that needs instruction, that's going to take a half hour, an hour or more of instruction and detail, then we'll schedule a special meeting for that group of people for that instruction, for those details. And we all from time to time, of course, need instructions. You know, we all should be students and we all should be leaders and teachers. The people that learn the most are the people that teach. And I can tell you, I know from my own experience, because I've been teaching numerous different things over for quite a few years, and my knowledge has increased greatly in areas that I'm kind of surprised that I'm efficient in the areas that I have been working in. And anybody who is teaching and speaking, they'll tell you the same thing, their experience. We learn the most, we retain the most, we know the most, because we're involved, and we need to know what we're talking about. Everyone should strive to be a teacher. To some degree. I mean, you know, not everybody can articulate well. Not everybody is of teacher material, but we can all teach each other. And just teaching each other or our children, we have more. We want to get more and more young people involved. We had a meeting earlier today, as I mentioned just a little while ago, and Crystal had brought up that she's working with some young people. And I asked her what age group, and she said they were high school. And that's a perfect age. You know, anybody working with high school students or even college students or even maybe an eighth grader who's, you know, kind of got it together. But an eighth grader, I think, can do it also. If you can get them out to our website, get them signed up into the, you know, as a member so that they could take the course, and you get a record of who this is and let us know, we'll flag them as a child coming in to take these courses. We then will send them free of charge a certificate of completion for whatever course they take. And that may be a way to motivate, you know, get the younger people involved. Also, again, keep in mind, I want to make this point now because I'm bringing this point up. This costs money to do, you know, just the paper, the envelopes, the print, the toner, and the mailing. We use a nice thick stock and nice envelope and so on. So again, donations. We need donations. Anybody can give $5 or more, please. You know, some people can give 10, 15, or 20. You know, whatever you can give, give. We need the money. Just hit our donation tab, find out how you can send us money. Okay, but anyway, that's a really great idea that we came up with tonight, and I'd like other people to be encouraged to try to do those things to get the younger people, the younger generation involved. Let's see, what else? Again, we're building the groups up. I mentioned we have national coordinators, and again, anybody who wants to participate, let us know. We have district leaders. We have four positions of district leaders. We need at least two people per district. We do have some of these people. We need to reactivate them, but we can use three or four in those areas in those districts. The more people working together, the better the job we can do. And again, some people can only stick in an hour or two a week, and that's fine. You know, and just take these positions and help us. Again, we expect that all of our leadership be enrolled in our courses. It's a prerequisite to have knowledge of what we're talking about. And at bare minimum, everyone at a bare minimum should take our two courses, okay? Anybody that's just a member should do that, because we have a duty to ourselves, to our children, to our neighbors, to our friends, to save this republic and keep it. And the only way you're going to save it is by having knowledge. As you know, Jefferson said, if people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. So, you know, let's get knowledge. So everybody should at least be taking those courses, definitely on a leadership level. Also, an education is reading our papers. We have so much meat in our papers. I mean, it's all about our founding father stuff. It's all about the Constitution. It's about the Bill of Rights, the Magna Carta. It's about great Supreme Court rulings that really are good and help us to make our case. Our founding fathers, quotes, I mean, biblical quotes. I mean, all of this is inside our court cases, and we bring together the knowledge of jurisdiction, due process, and all the things that people should know. You'll also see through that the process of filing in the courts and the necessary paperwork, from the summons right on through to the filing of the paperwork itself as far as an action is concerned, the procedures and the form and of the papers and so on and so forth. It's an education, I learned a long time ago, by God's mercy, because, I had a tough time when I was younger trying to remember things, and I didn't do too well in school. I was very, very good in mathematics. That was my key thing, but everything else, forget about it. I was trying too hard to remember things. That was my problem. And I learned early on that all I need to do is understand things. Don't let a word go by. If you don't know what the word means, look it up. If you don't know how something works, Google it and start tearing things up to see, how does this work? Recently I just learned how the structure works with the different agencies that, that is underneath all of the cabinet of the president. And I was watching and listening to some of the things that the president was saying and some of the things that other people were thinking and doing. And I started to look and I started to realize, who makes these different regulations? Who writes the regulations? So I went to investigate that because I didn't know that. And it turns out that the agency leaders, the people who are appointed to the agencies and the cabinet individuals who rule over those agencies, they're the ones that write and make the different instructions or rulings, or shall I say the regulations. They make the regulations. And therefore, the president has a lot to say about those regulations. That's pretty powerful. And that is what, I'm sure all the other presidents knew these things, but they've been controlled. This guy's not controlled that's in here right now. I want to talk about this guy because I'm impressed. 28 days, and I can't believe what this guy has accomplished and what he's doing. I am convinced after 28 days of watching this guy, he is us. He is us. And I'll tell you what, I've been listening to him, and he's been using a word here and a word there. I know he's got it from us. I mean, maybe one word comes up here. Okay, that's a coincidence. Then another word comes up over there. Well, maybe that's still a coincidence. But after a while, you start to say, wait a second, this is more than a coincidence. He's going after these judges. He's telling it as it is. He's going after the news media. I mean, again, I'm impressed. I believe he is us. He is one of us. He's really trying to save this nation, and he's bringing things in. And I do believe he's reading our papers, and I do believe he's working with us, and I do believe he's going to work more. And it is time for us now to step up and do what we have to do. It's time to rise up. It's time to push forward. And that's why we have to restructure our entire organization. And when I say restructure, I don't really mean restructure, because we've been structured well. We have a few things we want to add. But we need to rejuvenate the people that are in these positions and get more people to fill more of these positions and get everybody into a leadership role. We have 6,000 members at this point in time. We can put to work 6,000 people if people would just step up. We can put 6,000 people easily into positions that are going to be necessary to take care of and hold and keep going, especially when we hit that critical mass. We need 6,000 people to meet another 6,000 people in order to train and bring them into the process and keep them focused on the sense of honor, justice, and mercy, because that's the key to our success, keeping a bent knee and being humble. But anyway, getting back to these positions we need to be filled, we have individuals in every single state of this union that have taken on the work, the responsibility of having an address for us. Every We have a unified state common law grand jury for every single state. And each state has its own address. It's usually a P.O. box. And we also have a seal. Every single state has a seal. We have someone in every single state that has a seal. Now, they're not ready to use those things per se, but they will be using them as time goes on. Right now, we're operating under the unified United States common law grand jury. We have to be one voice, one focus, one courtroom. But once we break through, these things are going to be important to push forward to work with the counties. So we want to, kind of re-energize these individuals, make sure they're still on board with us. We want to make phone calls to them, personal phone calls. We want to wake them up. And if they're no longer active or they can't take a certain role, and they maybe they'll work in a different role, but then we have to fill that position. So we need leaders, okay? So state coordinators. We should have minimum two state coordinators per state. The more the merrier. 3, 4, 5, 6 is great, okay? We need the, and those state coordinators, their job really is to push down and organize their state and get county organizers, okay? If we can get one person in every county of the union, okay, and that's about 3,134 counties or something like that. In fact, let me look on the website real quick, because we do have an actual number of the latest count of counties, I think. Let me see what that is. 3,133 counties at this point in time. Okay, we need leaders in every one of those counties. At some point, remember, we need 4 administrators for every county. So we need 12,000 people to take these positions, okay? And I'm sure once we hit critical mass, that won't be a problem filling those positions. But we need to have enough people in place that understand the principles of what we're doing. We're not here for revenge. We're not here to destroy. We're not here to become them. We're here to bend our knee and do the right thing and come with mercy, but also come with justice. And bring this nation back to order again. We are working very hard to make it clear to President Trump, he wants to make America great, and that's great, and I see what he's doing is going to help accomplish those things. But no matter what he does, no matter how much business he brings back into this nation, no matter how much he gets to fortify these borders and prevent the people who are destroying our nation from coming in, bringing in the criminal elements and stopping that, and a lot of other things that he's working on, no matter what he does, once you change kings, you never know what you're going to get after that, okay? We're only going to return back to where we come from unless we take control of the courts. We bring morality back into this nation. This nation will be as moral and as good and as lawful and as righteous as its courts. If its courts are corrupt, the whole nation will be corrupt. If its courts are corrupt, every servant will be corrupt. If our servants are corrupt, the people will be corrupt. And that's where we're at. And I believe we've been under the curse of God for quite some time, because we have become a corrupt people. We were the children of God. And this nation was built upon the Word of God, built upon the Bible, built upon Mosaic law. And it's common law. That's what we have, natural law. We have a covenant with God. The Declaration of Independence is a covenant with God. We called upon the Creator to have his unalienable rights. And that's a blessing, and that's the beginning of the words, the preamble, the blessings of God, the blessings of liberty, right there in the preamble. And so our founding fathers knew and understood this, and they spoke about this, and we should too. When we stop speaking about it, we're going to lose it. And instead of the blessings of God, we will remain under the curse of God. So, but anyway, virtue, knowledge, temperance, patience, godliness, brotherly kindness, charity, these are the pillars. These are the pillars that create a great man. These are the pillars that create a righteous court. These are the pillars that can create a great and righteous nation. And if we don't have those things, we can't have morality. We can't have, and we will not have liberty. We will be a suppressed people just like anyone else. We're fighting a big battle here in New York, and we intend on taking it into the courts this week underneath our number that we've already filed. concerning the SAFE Act and this new Registration Act that they got going. We can't let them get away with this. And I'm going to tell you, if it's one here in New York on a federal level, it will be one on every state of this union, because it's a federal decision, and we will push it into every federal court and every state. We will push it through that process. But we have to win that case. And to me, it's a slam dunk case. I think it's really simple to win, providing we get an Article III court. And we have set things up so that we will get an Article III court. We have to work on it and continue to press towards that mark, and we will. So getting back to organizing, okay, let me go back. We need the state coordinators, okay? Those people will be pushing down to county leadership and working. Also, once they're organizing that, they need to be pushing down into the county organizers to work and to become and get involved in their own counties on the grassroots level with committees of safety. People need to understand that this is how our founding fathers saved this nation. This is how our founding fathers created this nation and held it through the committees of safety, which morphed into the committeemen, which have been robbed from us also. We have no control over the committeeman process, which means the political process. And I'm not talking about politics. I'm talking about the political process. Politics is garbage. We don't want nothing to do with politics. We want to be involved with the political process, looking for statesmen to bring people who are going to maintain and hold up their oath of office to support and defend and to honor the Constitution. And so that's what the committeeman's job was to do. That's what the Committee of Safety started out, was to create that process, to bring those ideas together, and then to hold on to them. We lost them. We lost them. And I'll tell you why we lost them. We lost them because God cursed us. I know God cursed this nation. As much as he blessed us with everything he blessed us, he also cursed us because we became demoralized. You know, I talk with young people, and I'm so surprised that, that they don't understand how evil and ugly and terrible and horrible abortion is. It's murder. It's killing. They don't know it. They will argue that point. I mean, not all the young people, but generally speaking, most of them. When I was a kid, it was the other way. I mean, everybody knew it was evil. Everybody knew it was wrong. Everybody knew it was murder. And therein is the temperature of this nation. If people can't protect their young, if people can't protect their unborn and their newborns and their children and care and nurture them, if they can't do that, they don't deserve any blessings. They do deserve the cursings from God. And that's where we're at. We need to turn it around. And it doesn't take everyone to turn it around. It takes the core to turn it around. It takes the small group of people to turn around. It takes bringing the king back into the court. And then the king will sweep the entire nation. The king in the court will bring justice into that court and require it. Also mercy. The king will require that our servants, through the people, through the king's bench, which is the juries, the grand juries, the trial juries, okay, require that these servants of ours obey the law, or we remove them from office. We'll just indict them. Simple job. Get rid of them. Done. Finished. Indict a servant. They're gone. Let's refill the position, and let's see what the next person's going to do. You know, we talked last week a little bit about the fact that we thought that there was a case out there that seems to would be able to sweep the courts and get rid of these judges. And you know what? That case is a false case. It's not real in the sense that it's a false premise. But there is some truth to that. And I think it's something we can work off of. And that is that the Constitution requires, and maybe when I get a moment to... I can look this up real quick, but it's in our Constitution. The basic requirement of a oath requires to support and defend. Those two words must be in there. They must be in there, okay? Constitution says so. And I notice that the judges do not have those two words in there. There are other words that do bring them still under the Constitution. And of course, they think because those words aren't in there that they're under some other kind of rules and laws and statutes that they think they can escape justice. We're not going to let them escape justice. You know, they were evil to play that game to begin with, And you know what? If they don't understand the law and they don't know the law and they've mistaken the law, well, oh well. They've never had mercy on us. And why should there be mercy on them? And I'm not talking about revenge. I'm just talking about what's right and wrong. They have those positions because they have evil intent and they want to do evil. And so they want to be protected from being punished from that evil. And that's why they sit in those positions. Okay. So we have other things going on here. We have the Committees of Safety, which we want to get. We've got a group going here, the Committees of Safety group, which is supposed to encourage, push forward the Committees of Safety in all the counties. And they should be working with the state coordinators, or the state coordinators, shall I say, should be working with the Committee of Safety group to help them to get the word out and instruct. We have the courtroom observers. I understand recently that that's kind of becoming a little more active. It's been quiet for a while, but that activity is going to be coming up. I think we're going to have someone speak a little bit about that in a few minutes. But we need more people to help us. We need a lot of people. Every member should sign up for the courtroom observer, every single member. And what the courtroom observers is all about, basically, is if someone in your neighborhood has to go to court and they need support, the courtroom observers put out the message. And if you're living close enough to a court and you can attend in order to go in and help be supportive to the person who's going to court, write an affidavit, what goes on in the hearing on their behalf, and give it to the people, and support them in any way we can. And if you get a big enough movement, like down in New York City, we had some big movements, and some other courts we've had some movements, but particularly in New York City, where we had enough people come in, we actually moved the judge in their decision-making to get rid of things and change direction, because he fears the people. They still fear the people. Get enough people in a courtroom, and the judge is going to shake in his boots. And rightly so, he should, because he's breaking the law every time he puts on that stupid cloak and sits on that chair. Okay, a welcoming committee. You know, welcoming committee, we need more help there. This is phone calling mostly, you know. You get a list of people, maybe a couple people a week you call. Welcome them into National Liberty Alliance. They're usually new members. Going through a list of things to let them know what we're doing, what we got available, what's free, the courses we're doing, come to the Monday night calls, get involved, join a committee, help us save the nation. You know, get them into the game. But we also want to reach back, you know. We want to reach back further to the people that have fallen asleep, that have been members for a while, and they kind of fallen asleep. We want to call them up and re-energize them, get them involved again. Investigative and Research Committee. You know, we've got about 15 people or 12. Let me think. I don't know. We've got maybe 12 people on that particular group, maybe. And we can use more, though. We need more. We've broken them into two groups, and those people really will investigate the facts of the case that we're looking into, or they'll investigate the laws that we may want people to look up and look into. The perfect place to learn how to become an administrator right there is in the Investigative Research Committee. Because what a grand jury is going to do? What is the investigative body for the grand jury going to do? They're going to research what cases are coming up before them. You're going to get stories from people, and they're going to look into it, and then they're going to bring it, you know, if they can't fix it, they're going to bring it before the grand jury for them to consider even trying to fix it themselves, or indicting if they can't fix it, and then let the trial jury decide. Okay, so again, Investigative Research Committee, we need people there. Habeas Corpus Committee, we have people getting ready to start. We're training them to write habeas corpuses, okay? And we've given them the framework for this, and we need them. We need more people. We wanted to start doing habeas corpuses again, but until we can get enough people trained and be able to write enough of these things, we need to, we're not going to go forward until that happens. Liberty Group Committees, okay? We need people, or Liberty Group Committee. We need people to work with contacting different liberty groups, okay, and bringing them to get more involved, to look to see what we're doing. And just ask for them and their membership that when we get into the courts, to get behind us and support us. And people who might want to become administrators, you know, they can continue whatever they're doing, and they should. But, you know, maybe they want to become an administrator, too. and work in their counties as a jury administrator. A very important position. Again, that is the investigative body for the grand jury right there. And we get to orientate these people to bring them in and prepare them for the job that they're going to do, sitting as a grand jury or sitting as a trial jury. Okay. We mentioned this last week, we're moving forward with a virtual newsroom, and we're going to be starting to talk about the news, particularly what's going on the national level in the sense of, with our president and with what we're doing in the courts. The whole focus mm-hmm. is really around what we're doing in the courts and anyone out there that is supporting or plowing a way for us to work and that therefore support what we're doing. We got bloggers, anybody want to get more involved with that, working with bloggers. And we also just today initiated the beginning of people to go out and talk with people to help us get more onto the radios, internet radios or whatever, even TV programs, to get the message out, to talk. We used to do a lot of that. It's been kind of slow the past year. But I think it's time to get back out there and, start getting the word out through whatever radio programs we can and so on. And every one of these positions, we want at least two people working. We always have to have a partner working with you. Partners keep each other active, okay? When we get a little lazy, the other partner will push you and vice versa. If you're sick and you can't make it to a meeting or death in the family or you're going on vacation for a while or something, your partner can make sure that they're at the meetings and then fill you in later on. But, everyone should be represented at our meetings, which is our board meetings, which are going to be held. And we already started. We've got two board meetings already. Next week we're going to have another one at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here in this room. We hope that anyone that joins us isn't there just to listen, but to say, hey, sign me up. I want to do this. I want to fill that position or that position. Whatever it is you want to do, give us an hour. If you're retired and you can give us your full-time effort, like Jan does and myself and a few others, then fine. Let's do that.
But
you can only give us an hour or whatever, that's good too. Yeah.
Can I say something here?
Absolutely not.
Don't forget, we are starting our own live stream and YouTube channel, and we will be looking for content for that. I fully expect, my vision is to have something like Gary Franchi or Russia Today that is strictly NLA. We may be interviewing you, John, as a news story to get the word out. All these people have to feed this channel. Because the thing with a news channel is you need content, and if we haven't decided, are we going to do it every day, once a week? We'll start out slow, but as it gets popular, we'll need more. And there's going to be lots of jobs that spin off of that endeavor alone. If we have a professional type news service that we can get people coming to us looking for this particular news, especially about the courts and things like that. That could be a very powerful tool for us, and people will bring us stuff. People will depend on us for news, and it will get us out there in the public eye. So this is going on along with everything else. So we're going to, we want to develop this whole media thing going on, and it's going to be backed up with a blog. It's going to be, we're going to have our own channel. We're going to have streaming news. Look, we're going to be able to go out in the street if something's going on. And people that have the ability to have a webcam and a mic, they're going to be able to send in content. Ollie's going to put it. We have a virtual studio already. Ollie's got everything set up, a virtual studio, just like Gary Franchi has in Russia Today. There's a desk. He's going to sit me behind one end and him on the other end, even though I'm here in New York and he's in Colorado. He has the ability to stick us together at a news desk. I mean, the possibilities are endless. This is exciting stuff, people, and we need everybody to connect in order to feed this machine that we're building, because it's going to be. We just got in the court. Well, I don't want to steer your thunder here, John, but the fact of the matter is the fight is already beginning. We've already pulled the trigger because we put the paper in the court and we got an answer from the governor, and we have to answer him. The beginning of the battle starting right now. Well, the first part of the battle is We have to fight for our court of record to move forward. This is monumental. We're going to make them accept our court of record, our common law grand jury tribunal. That's the first battle before we do anything, right? That's where we're at. And I think we're going to need some publicity to get that through. These judges are going to want to resist that. They know what it is. Some of the upper judges, they know what the court of record is. They know what common law is, and they know it's game over once the common law grand jury gets back in. They know that we're going to take the power out of their hands that they've stole. So that's going to require a lot of publicity and a lot of news. And this is happening like right now, because John's got to answer that paper here in the next month or whatever it is. I mean, they asked for a month, right? They asked for an extension to answer us.
Yeah, so, they didn't understand. I'm going to get in more detail of that next week, because we did post. It was really, they answered in a letter telling them we're going to answer, and also the fact that they asked for more days. But look, that tells us how dumb they are, because to the governors, that particular paper was only an information. And the other thing is, if they would have read it, they would have been seen that they didn't have to answer. We told them right in the paper they didn't have to answer. They just needed to obey the law. But we wanted to inform them and put them on notice, because we may go after them. And we are going after the governor here in New York, and we're going after both houses here in New York. And we're going to be doing that hopefully this week. I started working on that paper today. So hopefully by the end of the week, we'll get that in and out. And we're chasing. Look at the what we're going after is the gun law here in New York. And if we beat it in New York, we'll beat it in every single state, because we're doing it on a federal level. And we're making the point. This isn't. Look at our Second Amendment right is not just New York; it's the entire nation. And we've written papers before, which I thought were very powerful. But I think the paper we're putting together, especially a memorandum of law concerning the Second Amendment, especially for New York, but nationwide anyway, extremely powerful in my opinion. And it's going to be short too, but it's going to be powerful. It cannot be argued. Can't be argued. Anybody who would try to deny it is just the enemy of the people. They just want to disarm us. And that's evil. Anybody that wants to disarm you is evil. Why would anybody want to disarm me? You know, why? Because they're evil. That's why. They have evil intent towards me.
The first battle is getting them to accept us as the people. That's the first. They're going to try to kick us out. They're going to try to ignore us. They're going to try to pull all those games. Once we get past that, then we roll our sleeves up and get to work. But the first battle is getting this tribunal recognized, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And look at, if we get Trump support, if we get the look at, we're going after the attorney general. President Trump said that I got a guy that's going to make the law work. This is the guy. He's going to make lawful our nation, what needs to be done. He's the chief law enforcer. Okay. Well, we're going to take him for his word. We're going to copy Mr. Trump, President Trump, on exactly what we're doing. We're going to communicate to him concerning subversion against the United States of America from enemies both foreign and domestic, from within our government. And it starts in our courts. It starts with all of these people. We can show collusion, conspiracy across the board in every single federal court in America. We can prove that right now as we stand.
So we're leapfrogging over all these corrupt judges right to a good attorney general and a good president. So what I'm trying to impress upon
and the Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court.
Right.
And the new guy that he says is going to be like another Scalia. Well, we're going to find that out too.
But
you know, and the president's going to have to fire these guys if they don't do what they need to be doing. And we're going to let him know. And if we got to go after the president, we'll go after the president. Not that we want to, but look at, we're not going to be hypocrites. We're not going to let the president slide on anything when it comes to the law, especially because we're hypocrites if we do. We can't expect justice if we don't require justice at his level. You know, ignorance is no excuse for the law.
If he does anything outside of what the Constitution is, or that, I mean, there's a couple things I think he's pretty good. There's a couple things he needs to brush up on that I think he's a little ignorant on, and I think that's our job. But this is happening right now. I want to impress upon people that we're in the courts, and we're going to be talking to the Attorney General. We'll probably, we have the attention of the President. It's very important that we work like a well-oiled machine, because all of a sudden the dominoes are going to fall. We're going to need our courts. It's going to happen fast is my point. And we're not ready. And the only way we're going to get ready is to do all the stuff that John's talking about, this organization, because we've already pulled the trigger. So we need to get busy because it's going to require all these things to be successful. So I'm going to break now. But that's basically what I wanted to get out that, you know, and we are going to have our own newsroom, and that's going to require lots of research and lots of content too. So there's lots of jobs for lots of people. There's something for everyone. There's something for everybody's skill, from the top guy down to somebody who wants to put paper clips on paper and fold them and stuff envelopes even. You know, I mean, I don't know that we're doing that, but you know what I'm saying. Okay?
Well, we have been doing that.
Yeah, I understand that. So, yeah, so everything's important, and there's something for everyone at a comedy tonight. There's something for everyone at NLA to do. There's no reason that you should sit there and do nothing. You should be very excited, and you should be part of this effort, because right from the paperclip guy to the guy writing the papers, it's a team effort. If it doesn't go in the envelope and it doesn't get in the mail, it doesn't get done. So the guy putting it in the mail is just as important as the guy writing the paper, because it doesn't make any difference the guy writing the paper if he can't get it out. So my point is everybody helps, and it's a team effort, and there's no heroes here. We're all a hero. It's all a team effort. And so everybody has to click in order for us to have victory. And if we're going to have victory, we have this window of opportunity right now. Some of the stuff that's being said right now by the president and by people in his cabinet, you couldn't say 2 years ago. They would look at you like you got three heads. And
media does look at them like they got three heads. You know,
the news media is taking a beating, they're back on their heels now. And we should keep them on their heels, and we should knock them the hell over, because that's what they deserve.
I'm blown away by how he deals with the news media, because I tell you what, if I was the president of the United States, I'd be doing the very same thing he'd be doing. I'd be calling them liars just like they are, because they are liars. They don't report the truth. They just report, you know, the right or the left position on politics, and really are fulfilling the will of the elitist behind the powers here. You know what? They haven't got whenever a president gets into office, because he's so far outside the mainstream, he's not a politician, he hasn't been involved, and he just walked in when he became a president, he walked in, ignored them, and started working. They never expected that. They never had the time to kind of schmooze him over and get their claws into him. They figured he'd take 30-day break like most presidents do as the administration is being built. But this guy has hit the ground running, and he's got these people on the run. Everywhere you look at the elitists, they can't even plan to take them out because there's too much attention, number one, and they're so busy trying to protect their own rear ends right now because of the exposure that they're going to be going through by what he is doing. And then whatever plans they try to make, by the time they get that together, he's done so much more damage after that. They don't know whether they're coming or going. These people are on the run, from my opinion, from what I can see in my observation. They are on the run. We need to get moving now and keep them on the run, and let's take them out. Let's bring them into the courts of justice.
And what he's done is he's created a vacuum that we can move into, a news vacuum. Everybody knows their fake news. Now we put our news in, our real news, and people are not going to be looking. They already said that it's less than 10% or 4% of the people listen to the network newses. So it's up to us to move in now with our, I don't even want to call it alternative news, because it's going to be the news. It's not going to be an alternative. So now's why we have to move, because he's pushed them back for us. Now we have to step forward because he's pushed them back. You see, this is the whole plan, the top down, the bottom up. Now he's taking the top down. We got to move the bottom up into the place. We're the bottom, but we're going to step up, and we're going to be the newscasters. We're going to be the grand juries. We're going to be the prosecutors. You know what I'm saying? So he's moving all those evil, corrupted people because he's got something on them all. He's got their pedophile rings cracked. He's got the goods on everybody. So as they're running away, we got to run in, because if we don't run in, somebody else is going to go in, and it's going to start all over again. I mean, he can only do so much. It's up to us to step into that door that he opened for us. The door is open now. We need to step through it. That's the point I'm trying to make. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Rod. All right, Jen, do we have any questions before we move over to anybody who has any announcements? Let's do any questions if we got any.
Yes, we do have one question tonight. It says, if cities use administrative law, most of which is unconstitutional, then how much power does a mayor of any city truly have? And if they do have any authority, could they be of help to those of us trying to reinstate the common law in our courts?
Well, bear in mind, administrative law has its place. It just doesn't have its place in courts of justice, okay? Administrative laws are set up for agencies. I hate to use the word municipalities, but we'll use that for lack of a better word at the moment. You know, the mayors and the cities, the towns, the villages. Look, they all have to have, they have to have policies and procedures. And it must be run by administrative laws, okay, administrative proceedings. So when something goes wrong, there could be administrative proceedings to deal with that. If a person is employed in the government in a particular agency, then they have to follow the rules, the policies and the procedures, the code, whatever you want to call it for that. That's administrative. And they got to suffer the consequences of whatever is set forward. And if there is anything set forward concerning a reprimand or to be fired or even to be considered as a something that is criminal because they did something under the color of law, then they'd have to pass them over to back into the criminal court for the final justice. But they can use those administrative laws that they came in under the authority, you know, that they came in under and was doing things and then abused that authority. Well, they can be punished for statutes for concerning those things. I mean, that's some of the reasons why some of the laws written that we've used, when these people act under the color of law. But when you go into these town courts, village courts, all of that is set up as really administrative courts. They have no power or authority over the people without your approval. You know, they need to ask, do you mind if we prosecute you for this and you can suffer this, that, or the other thing, or do you want us not to be able to do that? You know, they got to ask for your permission. You got to participate. You know, a lot of people don't know this. You know, when you participate as an employer, for instance, and you participate in their rules, and then you have to deal with the Department of Labor, and you're in their administrative courts, and you can suffer a lot of consequences there, a lot of problems and a lot of situations if you signed into the game, you know. But if you've never signed into that, they can't really get you. They'll try because they think everyone that runs a business is part of that. I learned that firsthand many years ago. But, you know, I've learned how to ignore them and tell them, you know, to go take a hike, you know. But, but administrative positions or laws, they do have a purpose. By the way, we have someone coming through. I don't know why we have people that are not muted. Hang on a second. Yeah, there you go. Administrative laws or processes do have a place. I think I mentioned this earlier. Maybe I mentioned it on an earlier program. I wasn't aware of this, but, the agencies, the federal agencies, they're controlled by policies and procedures. What are they called? I forget. I think I was talking with you about this earlier, Gerard. What's it called? It's not codes. It's not statutes. It's not policies and procedures. It's called something else. You're not going to help me, Gerard?
Regulations.
Thank you, Jen. Right. Regulations. Okay. They have regulations. And I just found out, and I think I mentioned this earlier, I don't remember, but I just found out that all that whole process works off of the people coming in and they can change those regulations. And regulations are to control these agencies. It's policies and procedures. And it makes sense that the president would be involved with that and give the job to the agency heads to create the necessary regulations. The president should look at and approve. Ah, you've got to get this or that, or I don't like that one. However, but the point is that's how you control things. And when they break the rules, there's administrative procedures to deal with the people within the structure. And that is all good news. These people need to be dealt with if they're breaking the rules. Okay? So all of that is good. but you can't use administrative processes in a court of justice. Now we have to have a court of law. Now we have common law. And that's the problem is they get these courts, they call them criminal courts. And the United States Supreme Court has ruled numerous times that if you got the word criminal in front of the court, then it's not a court of justice. It's not a court of record. Criminal courts have nothing to do with courts of justice. Okay? Right there, it just takes them right out into something I call jurisdictions unknown because I have no clue. People say, oh, it's under this kind of law or it's under that maritime law or it's under this or that. Well, it's a lot more than just under that because there's a lot of other things going in there. They seem to make it up as they go. It's jurisdictions unknown is what it actually is. It's a mix and match of all kinds of things in order to accomplish the goal and the will of the state, in my opinion, and which I believe is fact. But
John,
but that's what that is. Okay, yeah.
I want to take this question in one little different perspective here as far as a mayor goes. A mayor, I was on a town council, and a town council, you have five board members. One of them is a town supervisor, but he cannot do anything without a quorum, without a majority vote of the rest of the board. So he needs two other people to vote with him. But a mayor, on the other hand, is like the president. He's like Donald Trump. He is the one that administers that law, those regulations that John's talking about. So if you get a mayor that is the ilk of Donald Trump, he absolutely can help you. Because he actually probably appoints the prosecutors and those other people in that system. So if he wants a common law court in his city or his it's usually a city. You can't have a mayor unless you're a certain size. Like a small town is not allowed to have a mayor because they can't set it up along the lines of the republic that's required in order to use that system. Right, we have representative government. So the bigger city, the bigger municipalities use mayors, and the mayor does have executive powers akin to the president. So if you get a conservative mayor, he can make the right decisions, and he could push the Constitution, and he could push the prosecutor, and he could because he has that power. And as long as he's doing, he's the right guy doing the right thing, just like Donald Trump is. Yes, if you can get yourself a good mayor, and imagine if we had good mayors in our cities working with Donald Trump, the rule of law would be done. We'd be done. The fight would be over. You know what I mean? So that's the power of a mayor. That's all I wanted to say. There's a difference between a mayor and a town board of a small town. And it's much harder to get a good mayor because those are the guys they vet because they know how powerful they are. Just like they don't let somebody in Congress that they don't have control over. They don't like to let mayors in that they don't have control over.
And they poison and kill anybody who tries to expose them in their little groups. Can't.
Okay, so, and again, that's the same thing with the governor. The governor is the same position. He's the administrator. And that's why we call it the administration for the president, the administration for the governor, and the administration for the mayor. And they run under the administrative process. And therein is the serious problem we're having here in New York. Not that it's legal anyway, not that it's in any way constitutional that we should have to deal with gun permits, but, at least it was handled by the sheriff. And the sheriff is supposed to be a non-political animal, even though he's a politician to some degree and he's elected, so on and so forth. He's kind of on a different level and he's more law enforcement. But the thing is he's not in the political chain of command. The governor can't say to the sheriff, do this, do that, or do anything. He's got his own thing going on in his county that he's responsible for, and he can thumb his nose at the president of the United States because this is his county that he's responsible for the law enforcement under the common law. Unfortunately, they don't know this, but this is what it's supposed to be. Here in New York, they are moving the control of our licenses or permits to have a weapon. Okay, they're moving it over to the state police. Now, the state police is under the administration. That puts we the people under an administrative process. You see how dangerous this is? We the people have been moved under an administrative process. And now they've moved the laws where they have to renew and register certain guns. I haven't read all through all this stuff yet, but you have to do certain registers. You can't have certain guns. You can't have certain ammunition. You can't have certain clips. You got to re-register every 5 years. If you don't register, then you're a criminal. They're going to come out and get you. And the state police, you're falling under an administrative thing and creating criminals out of people. Okay? And unless you're paying attention, people may not even know that this is even going on, that they've become criminals because they haven't went to re-register yet. Now, I don't know when this all kicks in. I'm just looking into this now, putting this whole case together. But herein is the danger. Well, we're going to take this battle right down to the permit itself. Don't tell me I need a permit. Don't tell me I need a license. Don't tell me I need anything to buy a weapon. I'm going to walk into a store and buy a weapon, and nothing should infringe that, with the exception of agreed upon or a computer check on the individual to make sure that they're not a terrorist or some, you know, dangerous criminal or something of that nature, or someone that's seriously mentally disturbed. And all those are kind of borderline concerns, too, you know. But I kind of understand that. I think we logically realize there's a problem here. We've got to figure that part out. So, but don't tell me. If I can slide a card, if I can put my number on the computer and they can remove money from my bank immediately, knowing exactly who I am and what I got and how much money I got in my bank, and that money is moved from one place to another, and I do a purchase that way, and I could do that in 1 second, don't tell me you can't run my name on a computer and tell whether I'm a danger to society or not. Because they can do that in 1 second. Agreed. If the computers are down and they can't sell a weapon for a period of time until the computers are back up, you know, we kind of understand those technical problems. Nobody should gripe about that. I wouldn't. I certainly wouldn't. But there's no reason for anyone to know what weapons I have, how much ammunition I have. I know they know what weapons I have. I know they know what ammunition I have. I know they know a lot of stuff about me, and they shouldn't know those things. And I shouldn't have to carry a permit in my back pocket in order to carry a sidearm or something. I shouldn't have to do that. We're going to beat that. We're going to stop that in New York. And if we stop it in New York on a federal level, it's going to take it across the entire nation. We're battling this up. We're going to take this case, and we're going to settle it once and for all. And I think we can do this. I really do. The timing is right. That's the key. You know, a lot of people have tried, but I've seen the cases of people tried. And I think they're poor cases. I think they make the wrong arguments. I think they genuflect to the individuals in the state level, to the judges and everything. They allow the judges to make a ruling. They made all the errors that we're not going to make. We're not going to allow a judge to decide this. This is for the people to decide. This is the jury. We the people. All law comes from us. We create the law. We are the author of law. We the people, we ordained, we established this Constitution for them. We created the law. We are the author of law. God is the author of the law, okay? He's written the law into the hearts of people. That's common law. But we are the author of law that controls our nation. We are the author of law that controls the jurisdictions, who has what jurisdiction and how much power we're going to give them and where we were going to restrict them. It's called the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, and Declaration of Independence, and the Magna Carta. That's what it's called. But generally speaking, it's the Constitution where we have laid out clearly what powers they can have, how far they can go, and where they're restricted. And the Bill of Rights solidifies that. You know, read the preamble of the Bill of Rights. I bet you a few people know the words that are in the preamble, which is only a couple of sentences. Very powerful when you really sit and go slowly through it and realize what's being said in that preamble, you know. But in any event, you know, we are the power, we are the authority, and we're going to make this clear in the courts, and we're going to make sure the president understands that and that he backs us up, and we're going to make sure that his highest law enforcer in America, the Attorney General, that he understands that and that he backs us up. As a matter of fact, we're going to ask him to send down a prosecutor to our case, numerous prosecutors, because we got 30 or 40 cases to be prosecuted, and they refuse to prosecute these criminals themselves. So we, the people, are going to prosecute them. And we want you to send people down to prosecute these cases. We, the people, will sit in judgment of those cases, not some judge. The people will. Untainted juries. people who are coming in with the honor, justice, and mercy, not tainted by the controls of the courts, the controls of the states, and so on. And if they don't go along with us, then they're the enemy too. I don't care how much good they do. I don't matter how much great America they want to make it. If they don't get the law back, we have nothing. You know, once the king dies, we go right back to the same crap again, no matter what. It's just the way it is. Worst thing in the world is to have a king. God has showed us that in the Bible many times. We've seen that in England. And we almost ran into that in the beginning of America. But we're back to kings again. We have a bunch of kings behind the scenes running this whole thing. Every court seems to have a king. People, you know, they hear the words of a judge and they think that that's the law. It's nothing. They're nobody. They're nothing. They have no power and authority to make these decisions. They never have. They never will. They never should. But they've been doing it and the people believe it. The people don't understand. They got to rule under American jurisprudence, which brings them right back to the common law, and they got to lay it out and show that they have the authority and what the rule of law is on that. And don't bring statutes into it because it doesn't come to play with the people. You people do not have to obey any statutes. Who writes statutes? The government writes statutes. What are statutes for? To control them, not to control us. We're to control ourselves. We're responsible to God. That's with a free nation. That's the cost of freedom. And if people are afraid of that, then you're never going to have freedom. It's that simple. People have to step up and become mature. That's why we have to be a moral nation. That's why Benjamin Franklin said, unless we're, I think it was Benjamin Franklin, I'm sure it is, that unless we are more, this is only made for a morally minded people. Okay? You can't have it unless you're a morally minded people. We have to be responsible. We have to teach our children to be responsible. We have to teach them that they have duties, that they have to respond, that they're the militia, and they're the deciders of the courts. They are the maker of law. And with that becomes a responsibility. It becomes a sense of honor that we must have. We have to have justice, honor, and mercy. And this is what the people don't know. And their children, because it's hard for them to hear it. They don't understand it. They can't comprehend it because they've been so destroyed and demoralized. And they can't control themselves. A mature individual can control themselves. And that's what we have to become. People with a duty, you know. Anyway, that's it with the questions. Jan, do we have any announcements before we move on?
Yes.
What we're going to do is we're going to take a few announcements, and then, you know, it's getting a little late, so I'm going to push things over to Brent. And when we go to Q&A, people can ask any questions. People may have some questions concerning what we're doing, restructuring and trying to get people things going. But, you know, they can ask questions either for us or for Brent or whatever, but we want to do get the mixture in there. Go ahead. We have another question. Oh, announcements.
Yeah. Right. It's time for the Western Patriot Report with Robert. I just unmuted him. Can you hear us, Robert?
I hear you.
Good.
Thank you. I don't have much this evening. However, in Nevada, you know, the Daniel Love, the special agent in charge, he was at the Bundy Ranch, and he was also in Malheur County, and he was reprimanded. He was investigated and reprimanded by the BLM. However, now the Congress are wanting to investigate him on ethics charges. So I believe probably he's dead in the water as a key prosecution witness. So hopefully that has an effect on the trial in Nevada. And in Portland, our judge Anna Brown, she's still denying the Constitution and the Bible and everything. She's told a jury that the Constitution is not the law. The law is what she says it is. That's what she when she know, put out the rules to the jury. That's what she put out to them. So she's, I guess she thinks she's the queen.
Very important.
Right, well, those are definitely some papers I'm dying to write, and you know, so any kind of a affidavit you can get to us on that is extremely important. I mean, we're going to do the New York case, and we're going to do the Robinson case. We met with the Finnegan family over the weekend, over last Friday, here in New York, and and we told, you know, we heard what their positions were on who they think is guilty, and you know, they brought the first person that that Mrs. Finnegan brought up concerning the guilt starts with the sheriff, and that's exactly our position. And I let her know that's the guy that's responsible. He's going to hang on the highest noose. He's the guy, you know. It doesn't matter that he gave his power to someone else. Shame on you. Everything that happened, because you gave your power to someone else, you are responsible for. The people can have mercy on them. That's up to the trial jury, of course. And it depends on how cooperative he's going to become with us. But we're going out after him, and we told her that we have every plan to go out after her and prosecute this case, indict these people, and we're going to start with the sheriff. And that's an important case to us. But we have the Robertson case that's very, very important. We've got to get done. We got the New York case, very, very important. We've got to get in. And this case here that you're talking about, very, very important. We've got to get it into the courts, and I'd like to get it in the next couple of weeks. I really would. Yeah. I want to go after this judge so bad. Go ahead.
The biggest problem in Portland now is the defendants are fighting with each other, and the support group has been so infiltrated with people that even the support group is fighting with each other, and it's just total chaos with everybody right now in Portland.
All right, well, let's do what we got to do. If you got some key people, maybe we can get an actual telephone meeting, you know, on Skype. You know, we can get a little details and maybe ask them to go out and do certain things or get certain things so we can go forward. But, you know, I really would like to know the names of certain individuals. And, you know, we do have some people on research. I'm going to put this job to them because we need to know the names of the who was really in charge of the federal of the FBI in that group, and who was really in charge. I mean, was Homeland Security in charge of this thing? Was the FBI really in charge of this thing?
The BLM was actually in charge, and then the FBI
Someone above them, because they're not. Look at they were the major player and the instigator, the problematic, the problem. They were the abuser. But when they shot Lavoie Finnegan, okay, when they came in and they murdered this man, that did not come through the BLM.
That came from the
White House.
That came from the FBI, but the White House ultimately. I mean, there was a lot
we
of communication between the Governor Kate Brown.
She's guilty too. She's complicit in this thing. She excited this whole thing. She played into the conspiracy. There was collusion between her and the White House to do what they did. That's clear as a bell. There was conspiracy to do what they did. The moment that the White House sent a representative down there to push this whole thing, which was, I believe, the FBI, and I don't know who the representative
was. Yes, that was the FBI that expedited it, and Britzling was one of the main key players there. He's since, I think he is retired now.
Okay, well, when they took control at that point, it was the next day or two that we saw that interview with Lavoie and says everything has changed. Everything.
Well, we also know that the FBI, you know, those two shots that didn't hit, one hit the truck and the other one didn't hit anything, just came close to a police officer. Mm-hmm. That was to force the state police to fire, thinking they had been fired on. And so the FBI set the Oregon State Police up, just like everything else.
Yeah, we need to get the major players. And you know what? Even if we just go after the sheriff, okay, I'm sure he'll start singing. And if he doesn't, then fine. You know,
I think every officer there,
thing.
every officer there is guilty of aiding and abetting at murder.
No doubt. No doubt. Yes. I mean, that whole thing. I agree. All right. Anything else, Robert?
No, that's all I have at the moment.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else, Jan?
Yes. Next, we have some news from our newsroom in Colorado with Ollie.
Hello. Do you hear me?
There you go.
Speak
Ollie.
Up
go
a
ahead.
Little.
Yeah. I'm on an old headset. I'm having total headset problems.
You're coming in fine. You're coming in good.
Okay. A few things. The guy that approached me 2 or 3 weeks ago, we've both been down to Denver over the last 2 weekends. He is going to be a tremendous asset to the NLA, and he has worked for CSU out here in Fort Collins for 20 years. He knows all of conservative college students, okay, and he will be on the Thursday night call. Now, Joe's friend Jim in Montana has been on the visitors list for quite some time, but it was sort of a secret and all this. Jim came down Saturday. Okay, he got in and visited Joe. We waited down at Denny's till he got back, and he come back and he gave us a report. Okay. Joe's a little bit is better off than what we were imagining on the outside. He's lost 50 pounds, you know, due to diet and whatnot. His main problem is his bad knee. He needs therapeutic boots, I think, which he's going to get. Yeah, but Jim said his heart's all right, so that it's sort of big relief, and he was going back and visit with him Sunday, and we told him a few things to tell Joe. Now, Joe is emailing Lindsay right now, so she's got contact with him that way. We start doing some papers through that. Okay, now, newsroom. I got in some more lights today at where I'm still working with the green screen. I'm trying some software now. It's $200, but the software I paid $40 for is still better with the green screen. I'm in a little apartment here. My VA rep come in last Friday. He said he looked at all his TV equipment. Now what are you doing? In fact, Mike, the guy I've been talking about, it's supposed to be 70 degrees here tomorrow. He's going to come over. We're going to go out and set up in a park and hone our skills as far as wireless mic levels and street interviews and working out in the field. Okay, now let me say a few things about Trump. He's got a lot of people that he's fighting right now. And during that Florida rally, there was a guy there that the car salesman, he wasn't very articulate, but he was in the head of the line, and he had to get in that line. He was there for hours. The local news team come up and they interviewed him and put him on the news. Okay. Now, when Trump was having his rally, he looked out in the crowd and he saw him and he says, "Get that guy up here." And the guy jumped over the fence and he walked and he said a few things, you know. Here's the thing. Trump right now is looking for allies. He's looking for people out here. People that get exposure. Okay. I've got our YouTube channel set up. It's called NLA News Source. And if you Google NLA News Source, it comes right up on the top. I need content. I need news content right now to get something going. But now, Trump, he is looking for reliable news sources, and he's looking for people that on his side. We get that thing going, and we put out reliable news, positive, reliable news, pro-Trump, and come out with solutions, NLA solutions. We get that and get some notoriety going. In a few weeks, Trump will notice it. He will notice it. And I think it'd be another way to to get in with the good congressmen and Trump and all this and that. It will attract a lot of good allies. But that's about all I got. I yield.
Okay, we had some word earlier Laura might want to say something about courtroom observers. I just unmuted her. If you'd like to say something.
Before she goes on, let me just respond a little bit to some of what Ali said. And I think that story, you know, that particular rally is the first video up on our news page. If you go to our news page, highlight news, and click on Trump in the news, we got three pages on Trump. One is White House briefings, which I don't think I have today's up there yet. President's weekly address, which I think he does on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, so this week will go up shortly. And then Trump in the news. Anytime I find anything like a rally, or maybe, you know, and even when he's bringing someone in as in his cabinet members and they're getting sworn in, sometimes those are 15, 20 minutes long, and there's some good stuff in there. So I've been putting some of those up too. This rally, I'm pretty sure this is the right one. This is one of the best speeches I've ever heard in my entire life since I've been politically conscious. This is the best speech. And because this speech revealed who Trump really is. I mean, look at everything he's doing showing who he is. But this speech, I mean, he is going to make America great. They're going to have to kill him to prevent him from doing it. And I think it's way too late. They lost their time to really get rid of this guy. And so they can't do nothing while he's hot and heavy. And I think he's going to be hot and heavy through his entire administration. This guy's like the ever-ready battery. What's that bunny thing? What's that commercial? You know, just doesn't give out. This is this guy. He just loves the work. I don't even think he sleeps. I mean, I get up in the morning already. He's got stuff going on and news being put out. So it's an amazing amount of stuff. But anyway, listen, anybody who's watching the news and spending time watching the news, first come to these three pages and keep up to date. You know, once you catch up with all of these videos, and if you haven't seen all these videos, you should go start from the beginning and watch them all. It'll really lift you up. I mean, everything that this guy is doing. But once you catch up, you know, maybe you'll spend an hour a day on watching a few videos or something and to see what he's doing and what's going on and getting the words right from his mouth, what's really happening. Instead of because when I watch the news, and I did watch the news yesterday and the last few days and watching the news, I'm watching this stuff, hearing and seeing what he's doing, and then I'm listening to the news and I'm wondering if I'm on a different planet or something because what are they talking about, you know? So anybody paying attention, you got to really hear what this guy's talking about. We need to know. And with knowing and knowledge, then we can support, and we can support with all of our heart and really do what has to be done to save this nation. Okay, I'm done. Now, who's coming up? Is this Laura?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, go right ahead, Laura.
Okay, I just wanted to let people know, especially newer people that have got on, is that there's a courtroom observer committee, and we have calls every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. on Eastern Standard Time in the same call room as this. And there was a lull for a while because anybody that has a case can go to the court under committees can go to the courtroom observer menu and fill out a form for courtroom observers. So what I do is I send out the notice to people in your state and also the courtroom observer pool. And I've been getting really a good feedback from people that offer to help other people when I send out a notice. So one guy, and some people don't have computers, so I just write down the information and I put it in a notice, but I give their phone numbers so you can call them to make a plan. So this one guy, he had started out calling me last summer, and I sent out an emergency like the day before, which, you know, I mean, that happens and people do get somebody, but it's nice to have at least a week's notice. So he called me back and thanked me profusely because he said that one person showed up and that made all the difference for him because he said they were going to take him away and not tell anybody. They don't even have charges against him. It's a retaliation thing because he knows how to argue with them, and he got his son-in-law's case dismissed, so all they're doing is messing around with him. So then this last time he called me recently, and seven people called him from NLA to help him. And I think four showed up. And he was really, he left me the best message. And then I've just been getting some more notices that I've been sending out. And that's, it's been a lull really since August. And I think it's because a lot of people don't know about it. So there's also on the drop-down menu, there is a courtroom observer protocol list that has, because when you're an observer, there's a, instructions for an affidavit to fill out, and then there's an affidavit form to download as well, because that's, you're a witness and you can write down its evidence of what's going on in the court. And so that's really powerful for the person that has to go to court. So that's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you, Laura.
Yeah.
Okay. And again, you know, courtroom observers, everyone should be a courtroom observer. You know, you may never have to go to the courtroom, but you should be available for something comes up in your neighborhood, in your area, and you could make it to the court to support these people that they need this support. You should do it, because it's your duty. And bear in mind, you may have to go to court one day, and you're going to want people to support you, and you'll be able to run it through. And obviously, the people you would go to support, I'm sure you'd call them up and say, I got to go to court now, too, and can you come help me? And you'll get those people. So look, it, this is important. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where our battle is. This is what we must do. Okay. Anything else, Jan?
No, that's all that I had tonight.
Okay, let's see, Gerard, are you ready to take the pilot's wheel here, or what?
Oh, I was just going to go to bed. No,
that's what I was going to do. Anyway,
yeah, I'm ready.
Okay, let me introduce Brent first, and I know Brent was in here earlier. I think he's still, yep, there he is, I see him. Okay. All right, let me introduce Brent. Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence in Common Law. Anybody who hasn't read this book, you need to read it about 2, 3, 4, 5 times. I use it as a reference book. I got it all marked up. They get yellow all over the place and pages folded in. And in fact, the backing's broken and falling apart. I think I'm going to have to buy another one. You know. But anyway, Excellence in the of the Common Law by Brent Winters, the author. And he has his website, is commonlawyer.com. Brent? You got the mic.
Thank you, John.
And Gerard, thank you got you. The controls. Thank you. Well, let's go to Q&A for right now, Gerard.
Yeah. Okay.
Go right ahead,
Gerard.
You got it.
Thanks. Yes, Gerard. Am I coming through okay?
I hear you fine. Yes, Brett.
Oh,
you
good.
Are.
Well, I'm driving, and I'm driving a diesel, and it's kind of noisy, but apparently it's working okay. Well, I wanted to mention a couple of things that have been on my mind, and then Gerard weigh in if you'd like, of course. Been thinking about D.J. Trump and his demeanor in light of history, and I reminded that if Donald is able to do what he says he wants to do, that's good, and he looks like he's working at it pretty hard. But if something happens to him that isn't right, or something, if he turns out to be wrong, or even worse than all that in this way, if it goes to his head, that he gets to thinking that he's more than a man, that's our fault. And it's up to us to take care of Donald and not let him do that, not allow him to get too blown up in the head. Men at their best are only men at best. That's not saying much, and that goes for him, too. I'm glad he's there. But at the same time, I'm reminded of that fellow in a country called Italy. They called him El Duque. His name was Benito Mussolini. And Benito Mussolini loved his country. He loved his people. And he was patriotic, as much as he could possibly be. And he loved his people, and he wanted worse than anything in the world. His life is fascinating, but he wanted worse than anything in the world that his people would love him. And it wasn't enough that 59% of the people or 51% of the people loved him. It was his ambition that everyone would love him. And when he began to gain power, he began to more and more want to do what the people wanted so that they would love him as much as he loved them. And he said it pretty much that way on more than one occasion. People loved him for that reason. And it was said of him that he had almost a childish interest in everybody. He wanted to know about everybody he met. He asked them questions. He didn't talk about himself. And I've been watching DJ Trump, and he's that kind of a personality in that he really is sincere. Seems like he's interested in other people, especially people that aren't on his economic level. He really wants to know them. He wants to know who they are. He wants to help. He wants to help the forgotten American. Of course, DJ Trump said he's going to do it. Whatever he says he is going to do, he says he will do it. And you're going to be pleased, he says, when that happens. Well, that's kind of what El Duque used to say. He was famous for saying, I will make the trains run on time. Because Italy wasn't up with the program. The trains were running on time. Nothing was working on time. He said, I'll make that happen, and he did make it happen. But the last image we have of Benito Mussolini and his wife is their bodies hanging upside down from the rafters of a train station or a bus station in Rome. People turned on him because they loved him so much, they let him get out of hand and went to his head. Pretty soon, things got crazier and crazier and crazier, as happens with people in power sometimes. And they killed him, murdered him, and his wife, with extreme hatred. And there's no question, if there's anything in history that doesn't change, it is that whoever in the public eye is loved one minute, especially those in government, loved one minute will be utterly hated the next, given the right circumstances. That happened to Richard Nixon. He won in an absolute landslide in 1972. And within 2 years, the whole country was clamoring to throw him out of office and impeach him. And all those things happened that quick. Of course, the most pronounced example is Jesus Christ entering Jerusalem. The people were crying, Hosanna, Hosanna, like saying, God save the king. They were looking to him to deliver them from Rome's yoke. And within not many hours, they were screaming, nail him to a wooden post, crucify him. That's not unusual in world politics ever. So this man, DJ Trump, I don't know the man. This is politics. I don't have a clue who he is outside of what I read. But the Bible says, pray for him. That's what it says. And that's a powerful thing that we can do. Pray for his sanity. That he doesn't lose his mind or get to thinking he's somebody he isn't. That the wrong people don't get to him with the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the vain glory of life. And he'd be destroyed. Well, that was one thing I wanted to mention. I think that's eminently important. Well, it's easy when you're winning, it's easy to wallow in fields of glory. And it looks like that the conservative or the big government folks have been defeated. The sex perverts, the pedophiles are on the run. And it's easy to wallow in fields of glory and think everything's all right. But when you do that, that's when you're in danger. And the history of warfare then teaches us that. So let's keep in mind who we are relative to who he is, who he is relative to who we are, and who we all are relative to who the Creator is. Well, the second thing I wanted to mention today is an experience I had when I was near 30 years ago. Well, yeah, 30 years ago, I was in the mining business out west, I was wound up in a place in an arid, dry western state where I discovered there were mining districts, and I did not know what mining districts were. So I did some prospecting on the subject, and I discovered the library. I also found out where the minerals were in the library, too. That's a good place to start. But I discovered that mining districts had been formed when men first came to that part of the world, and there was no governor. There were no courts. There was no governor. There were no laws. There was no legislature, no counties. And men held meetings and formed mining districts. And then they voted that they, in their district, they set boundaries, they set fundamental rules for mining claims, property rights, how long they could be owned, what it took to own them, etc. And then they voted in a man called a recorder, a man to record property right claims. And he became the repository, just like we have at the courthouses. They didn't have courthouses, but sometimes they did build buildings where the recorder would keep these records of property rights. And they also then voted in a clerk to administer the impaneling of juries. There were no sheriffs. There were no deputies, no county board, no county, just mining districts. And a couple of officers. There was a presiding officer that would preside at meetings, but had no power other than that. And these courts that they established, they all agreed in these mining districts that these courts would have both non-criminal and criminal jurisdiction. This was a grassroots kind of movement, because there was no, as they said, justice there. They being men, were responsible to establish a way to observe our common law for our due process. That's what common law is. Impanel juries according to the course of the common law in cases of theft, murder, in cases of dispute over property, not criminal matters. Well, I followed this through, and I discovered that these cases that had been deliberated in these what they called at that time miners' courts in mining districts, wound their way eventually when state legislatures were established. The appeals time from these miners' courts was told until the state had established other courts to which they could appeal. And when that time came, the men that felt like they were wronged in the miners' courts appealed. And those cases eventually wound their way to Supreme Courts of the states that had been established, and some of them even went above that and were appealed on up to the Supreme Court of the United States. And the Supreme Courts of the states, of states Nevada and California, I'm referring to, those courts and the Supreme Court of the United States, you can go read the opinion still, ratified in hindsight the jurisdiction of the miners' courts. Now, I believe only Nevada retains mining districts, and I don't know of an instance where today that you could go into a miners' court, but the districts are still there for other reasons, much like the hundreds. The hundreds are still in New Jersey for political reasons, not for court reasons. But where justice wasn't available, where men could not resolve their differences between them, where crimes needed to be deliberated, men needed to be tried. If you don't try men for crimes, murder, theft, the Bible says it defiles your land. You must correct those things. Men must face the music, and they must face the consequences, and the consequences then have to be delivered in order to cleanse the land. That's an ancient teaching. It's always been the teaching of course, the Bible, the law of God, and it is also, has always been, the teaching of our common law. The common law being inextricably bound to the land, it's called the law of the land, as our Constitution calls it. And along with that idea is the understanding that when the law of the land is defiled, the land itself is defiled. That's just the way the Bible says it, but that's why the common law, of course, took that same position. Well, the reason I bring that up is this. Paul the Apostle tells us, 1 Corinthians chapter 6, they weren't finding justice in the courts. The courts had become Romanized. Well, they were, of course, the Roman Empire. And the corruption, to read about those times, it's plumb silly, the kind of things you read about. There were the bribery, just beyond anything, as bad as it is here, and it's bad, but beyond anything we could imagine. But people are saying today they can't find justice in the courts. And when men can't find justice in the courts, that's when everything falls apart. By the way, there is no justice except on the individual instance level. The individual level, justice only occurs instance by instance. State legislatures don't make justice happen. As a matter of fundamental ideals of our common law, neither do governors or presidents. Justice happens at courts. And the miners' courts, of which I spoke a little bit ago, the people that administered those, they didn't think about a governor, they didn't think about a sheriff, they didn't think about a president. All they were worried about establishing was courts that impaneled juries and made decisions. Because the judicial branch, as we call it, the judicial power of government, and that's a common law ideal to have separate co-equal branches, as we do in all of our states and at the general level in Washington, D.C. All of the idea that we have a judicial branch is unique to our common law, and the judicial branch is the foremost and first branch of government. You can live without the other two. You cannot have a country. You cannot have a juridical entity, a state, without courts that deliver justice according to the course of the common law. Now, when I say that the courts are the first branch of government, that means, and the men, what's amazing about these miners' courts, these men were not educated men. As a matter of fact, probably most of them couldn't read and write, although I know some could, what I read. But from what I read of some of the mining claim notices that were written, it's doubtful that many could read and write. But it's uncanny. They all understood somehow that they had to have courts first, and they knew they had to have juries, and they did impanel them. And one of the most fascinating to me, and I think it would be to you too, accounts of our own history as Americans is how we tramped across unorganized, woolly wilderness and established courts. And there are books you can read about that. Dean Pound, the Harvard, 100-some years ago, he wrote a few volumes where he researched all the courts that were established in the wilderness areas of the United States, how they operated, and what made them tick. And it is no accident that the Bible reveals God's government the same way. When Israel was delivered that land deed called Deuteronomy, they went into the land, and the first thing they established was courts. They didn't worry about establishing anything else much because the Bible, God's government, God's law, didn't give them much else. And that's why Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the first five books, and then Joshua is about the conquering of the land of Israel. He divided it, Joshua did, and conquered it. And then the next book is Judges. The government of Israel was the courts, and that's it. Because the courts are all that's needed, really. Well, if we're not getting justice in our courts, then what we need to do is what the Apostle Paul says, 1 Corinthians chapter 6. We need to impanel our own juries to deliver our own justice. And it needs to start, as is indicated there in 1 Corinthians 6, with non-criminal matters. That seems to be the clear indication of what was going on there, and we have other reason to believe that. But it's important that you start somewhere. And there's no reason why in America we can't do what Americans started doing in the beginning, organizing our own districts, whether they be by townships, counties, or some other level of jurisdiction or measure of jurisdiction, impanel juries and resolve our differences. That means you have to submit to the court. You have to submit to the decision of the jury. It'd have to be voluntary. The government ought to be voluntary anyway. If you want to be a part of it, you can go someplace else or not participate. You're not going to be bound by the jury. Well, that's what I had on my mind, Gerard. Again, as always, I appreciate the opportunity to say it. We need to be saying things, saying the truth as much as we can in this, at this time. And it's not like we don't have the technology using telephones the way we do and the computer to do it. So let's be doing it. And I appreciate also all the comments that are made and the reports that are given concerning the Bundys, the trial, the trials, and there are many others. That's just one. There are a lot of injustices in our courts these days. Well, thanks, Gerard. That's all I had this evening.
Well, amen to that. So our queue is wide open. Get in there. We do have somebody in there. It's Mike. I'm going to unmute him. I'm going to see if he has a question. We'll see what his question is. Go ahead.
Hello.
Mike, you've been unmuted. Go ahead.
Thank you, Gerard. Last Friday night, I was asked to go to a scope meeting in New York, Erie County, Buffalo area. So I decided to go, and you're aware what scope is, aren't you? The group?
Yes, I am,
scope?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. Okay, after the meeting, they had a kind of talk session, and Erie County Sheriff Tim Howard was there. And once everybody got done talking to him, the room kind of emptied out, and I corralled him over in the corner, and we started talking. And I asked him, I says, Tim, I says, have you by any chance read any of the paperwork that you were sent from National Liberty Alliance? And he looked at me, and he goes, yeah. He says, I got a lot of papers from them. He said, it's really, really interesting. And I says, well, you are aware of what their purpose is, aren't you? And he kind of looked at me with a blank look on his face, and I says, we're trying to get into the court system for the common law grand juries. And he goes, oh. And we started talking about the jury system and how what we're trying to do in the court systems. And then I said to him, I said, well, you know that you have the ultimate power within the state of New York over and above any federal agency. And he says, yeah, that's what I'm told, and that's what my position supposedly is supposed to be. He says, but I have a real problem. And I said, well, what's that? And he says, well, he says, Buffalo is kind of a strange place because we're right on the border of Canada. And he says, we have FBI agents, we have Border Patrol, we have the U.S. Marshals and the federal court. And he says, there's so many federal agents in the Buffalo area, he says, I'm outnumbered. And he says, as a matter of fact, he says, you probably heard what happened in my jails a little while ago. And I said, no, I haven't. He says, well, the federal marshals came in and arrested his officers in the jails because of a process that they were doing to prevent their officers from being spit on by the prisoners, and they were getting blood thrown at them. And a lot of the prisoners have AIDS. And they weren't very excited about the way that the sheriffs were putting masks on the prisoners. So anyway, he had no control over what the feds are doing in the Buffalo area. And he said he even went on his own dime. He paid his money to go to Las Vegas under Sheriff Mack. When Sheriff Mack got all the sheriffs together, he had sent paperwork out to everybody, all the sheriffs. And they went, and he went on his own time and his own dime. And he went there, and he asked Sheriff Mack, he says, well, tell us what to do. Show us how to do this. And Sheriff Mack dropped the ball, never answered him, never responded to him, and it was a total waste of time for him to do that. And I says, well, you know the National Liberty Alliance has the constitutional courses. And he goes, I understand that. He says, but I need people behind me to back me up. And I says, well, have you thought about the militia? And he says, yeah. He says, that's one of the ways. However, he says, there's nobody in this area that I'm aware of where the militia has come to me that I can really rely upon.
Well, he sounds like me. You can't send your sheriff up the hill with a sword out and nobody behind him. So he's having the exact problem that I've been reiterating for a couple of years here. He needs people behind him in order to accomplish this. Now, certainly, you know, if say he's got something going on in his prison, we can certainly file paperwork in a federal court. Now, he absolutely does have jurisdiction over the feds in his court because that's what the Sheriff Mack case did. Now, Sheriff Mack, you know, I don't want to speak badly about Sheriff Mack, but Sheriff Mack has not really educated himself completely, and he's of the opinion that we're putting the cart before the horse with the common law grand jury. He is very statutory in his belief. You know, he's been tainted by his law enforcement career, I guess, of the way they brainwash police officers and stuff. And he thinks that in order to impanel a jury, you need a judge. Well, what about when you're going after the judge? You know what I mean? U.S. versus Williams makes it clear that the people are to impanel juries and that they cannot tell us how to do it. So, you know, look at he can impanel his own common law grand jury. He can go out and get a jury. It's in precedent. It's in history. It's in tradition. You know, the sheriff used to preside over the court. So obviously he can't do that in a vacuum. He needs a group of people. And I don't know how many NLA people we have up there. But I do know people up there that were in the Tea Party group, even here, and they're out there. We have connections out there in Rochester and in Buffalo. We got connections through Scope. We got connections with the militia out there. There's a big, big militia out there. I don't know if you know it, but they're over 20,000 strong from what I'm told.
How can I get a hold of them? Do you know how I can get a hold of them?
I'm not going to say anything on here, but I'll get your contact information, and what I'll do is I'll put you in touch with somebody out there. We should talk. We need to give him support. Look at he's stuck because he's stuck. I'm glad you brought this up because this is exactly why we need our committees of safety. If people had committees of safety going in that community, they could address these problems. They could be having the meeting, and they could be supporting the sheriff, and the sheriff could be supporting them, and it would be a match made in heaven.
Right.
And who's the militia? You're the militia. I'm the militia. It doesn't matter. You know, look, we're all the militia, but as far as a organized militia, I mean, there's guys out there that are actually active training. They're the militia. They're actively the militia. And the sheriff is the guy who can call up the militia. So, we can put him in touch with people out there that would help with that. And,
hey, let me pipe in for a minute here. I don't know that I missed part of this conversation, but I did hear the beginning and parts of it in this part. And I don't know if you brought this up, but look, herein is the Committee of Safety. We need a committee of safety out there in that county. We need our members out there to recognize this sheriff and get this committee of safety going, follow the instructions and the framework, put together a resolution, have a meeting with the sheriff, start meeting with the towns, and that's how you're going to empower that sheriff. This is the purpose of the committee of safety. Also, you can start to put your feelers out at that point in time. Look, we're all part of the militia anyway. But let's get the support of the people. Let's get the groundswell there. That's how we can deal with this and support that guy.
Yeah,
right,
that's what I think. He's a committee of safety. And look,
so someone's got to spearhead that. Whoever's in that county, let's make some phone calls to the people in that county and let's get them spearheading the committee of safety.
Now, hey, what county is that, by the way? Who is this, Mike?
Did he say Erie?
Erie County, yeah, Buffalo.
Erie County, yeah. Yeah,
Buffalo,
okay,
New York.
Erie County. You know what? Right next to that, let's get a hold of Mongello out there. He's right up there in Niagara. We got a lot of people in Erie.
Yeah, we got a lot of people. And we got
people in Niagara. We got people in a few of those counties up there. But Niagara and Erie particularly, we got some good members up there. Let's get a hold of these people, and let's get them going and working together.
And if we can get the Niagara people working with them in Erie, and they can get a hold of their sheriff up there, you know, you got two sheriffs working together, then move over to the next county. You know, build a coalition, not only between the people and working with the sheriff and getting the towns together, but county to county, shoulder to shoulder. This is what we need to do.
I'm just wondering, and I don't know if we should, you know, if maybe you know or maybe you don't know. That's okay if you don't, but who alerted the marshals that the sheriffs were putting masks on the guys who were spitting on the sheriff? So in other words, there was people with AIDS or whatever that were spitting on the sheriffs, and then somebody made a complaint, and the feds came in and arrested the deputies that were doing that. Is that right? Is that the story?
That's what I understand. That's what I understand. Yep.
So I don't know, these people that were spitting on the sheriff's deputies and stuff, I mean, were they like, who were they? Were they local people? Were they illegal aliens? I mean, how did they get a complaint into the feds, and how did the feds respond? Look, we can't get the feds to respond to anything for us. They only come out for ranchers and arrest ranchers. So now they're coming out for prisoners and arresting warrants. Everything's on its head, isn't it?
Yes, backwards. Totally backwards.
Yeah, I mean, so I'd like to know what the politics was there. How did the feds get activated to come in his prison and arrest certain deputies? And I mean, you said they're putting the mask on the prisoners,
right?
So in other words, the sheriffs weren't wearing protective masks. They were sort of muzzling the prisoners. Is that what the case was?
Right, right. And they were saying that they didn't have the authority to do that. That they were violating their rights. And that they were too tight, and he was showing me that the straps that would hold these things on, they would have them on there, and you could stick two fingers in between that and their neck. There was no way it was too tight. But these guys wouldn't stop spitting at the officers, the guards, his deputies. And so that's when they took it upon themselves to protect his guys, and then all of a sudden now he's getting rammed for it.
Well, I don't, you know, look, I mean, when do you put these masks on? When you're moving them from cell to cell? Or do they just wear them all the time? I mean, look, that could be a form of torture if you're doing it too much. But if they're spitting on them, you have to go move them. So, I would say you could put a mask on them when you're moving them and stuff because they're spitting on everybody. I don't think you could leave that mask on all night. I'd put them in a freaking glass cage and let them spit on the glass if they want. You know what I'm
right.
saying?
Right,
but,
right.
But, I mean, I don't know what the particulars were, but
I don't either.
Somebody had a line. It would be interesting to find out, to get some affidavits on that incident, to see how the feds got involved, what exactly was going on, you know, before we jump to conclusions on that. But, you know, I mean, here they come in and they arrest sheriff's deputies. We can't get them to arrest anybody. They're arresting all the wrong people, you know. And I mean, I'm not saying that there wasn't some abuse going on. I'm not jumping to that conclusion. I don't have enough information to say that. But in the meantime, you think they would come out and look at it's police officer to police officer. Why would you just come in and arrest guys like that? Why wouldn't you give a warning and say you can't do that? You see what I'm saying? It sounds it sounds to me like it's more tactics to take power away from the sheriff and his deputies and make unrest in the jails between the prisoners and the authority of the sheriff. That's what it sounds like to me. That's where I think it's going to end up going. So,
well, this may be related. This may not be related. But they were making arrests around the Buffalo area on illegals. And they came down on him really heavy. And Buffalo, they want to make Buffalo a sanctuary city, regardless of what Donald Trump says and regardless of what the federal law states. So what they were doing, the Erie County sheriffs, they were going out in the outlying towns like Hamburg, New York. They were going up to Grand Island, and they were making arrests like crazy on illegal aliens. And they arrested a bunch of felons. And it might be retribution against his department for going over.
Absolutely, and I'm sure it was. And this was all before Donald Trump was president, right?
Yep.
Well, guess what? Now's the time to push back, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So but we have a window of opportunity, and I think we can look at. I think that we shouldn't drop the ball. Look, you're on a national call now, and you're on, and everybody in the state here is listening, and all those local communities. I think the COS is a very important part of this. And I also, I think, you know, see if we, our news thing, we could, if we flesh the story out, we could throw it on our news channel and bring, nobody heard about it. This is the first I've ever heard about it. It's only in Buffalo. My goodness, it's only across the state. I'm not even, in other words, we're not even, the news isn't even reporting on local stuff, right? So the local news is managed as much as the national news. Because it's all the same people that own it, you know.
Right.
So what we need to do is media to this, attention to this. We need to get this out, and then we need to establish some NLA and people out there. They need to do a committee of safety. They need to support. They need to meet with the sheriff. And it doesn't take that many people. Look at it. If he had 50 or 100 people that were behind him, we would even file paperwork. They go to court with him. And especially now, that the pressure would be, they would not be able to hold up to it right now. And with Donald Trump as president, that incident right there with that sheriff, he could raise that whole thing up. He might even target in on that to make an example out of the feds over there. You know what I'm saying?
So, right, so right.
I'm glad you brought it up, and we shouldn't drop the ball on it. We should get him some support. Who's ever out there, like John said, we have people out in that community that would support him. I know they would. They're good people, and they should know about it. And so that's what we're about. And so this could be one of the first things we do in New York State. One of the things we do on a local level. And look, if it gets into the courts, because it is the feds against the sheriff, everybody can participate. Because when we do a court watcher thing, we do phone calls, and we can have people calling from every state in the union on an issue. If it ends up becoming a court case, that's what you do. You call. That's what we did. That's what we did out with the Dean case, and that's what helped, release him.
Right.
You know, after we did our habeas corpus. So,
Sheriff Howard is a good sheriff, and he's a constitutionalist all the way. And he was one of the first ones to go to bat against the SAFE Act. And he goes to all the SAFE the scope meetings, I guess. And he looked really beaten down. And when I was talking to him, he was very disgusted and disappointed. And I hope he runs again for sheriff. It's his second term. And he's the best sheriff that this place has ever had. And everybody, most of the people love him, except for the Democrats. You know, they're all trying to get him out of there.
Yeah.
Because he's a Second Amendment sheriff, you know. Now, you said you knew somebody from the Scope. Anybody from Scope in the Buffalo area?
Yeah, there's Bill Robinson out there, has a radio show, the Second Amendment show. He's big on this stuff. He's following us. He's also with GOA of America with Larry Pratt. He's very active, and I'll talk to you after the meeting. I mean, maybe not tonight. It's going to be late,
okay.
Unless you don't mind me calling you. I can give you his contact information.
I don't mind at all. I'm up late. I'm up till like 5 a.m. anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Okay, so I'll give you some contact information, and we'll kind of pull the stops out, and I'll give you some names to call. We'll get the ball rolling.
Excellent.
You know. And we'll build them up. We can build them up. There's all kinds of stuff that could go on in a very short period of time for him out there. You know what I mean?
We need it. He needs it bad.
Yeah, yeah. So we should encourage him. You know, how many constitutional sheriffs do we really have in New York? And the ones that we have are all out that way. They're all out in Western New York. You know.
Right, right.
So we really need to jump on this. We don't want to lose him, you know. Very important.
Exactly, exactly. So, okay, very
okay.
Good. Well, thank you very much, and get a hold of me, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah. Hey, the NLA news source, somebody's asking me out there what the URL for it is. I don't know what the URL is. I think if you just Google NLA news, it comes up right on the top of Google. all of you in there, you could pipe in if you want. But anyway, right now, there's only one thing up there. So this is something that maybe we could make a video on and throw it up there, you know, on this. This could be one of our first breaking news stories. Although this was probably, how long ago was this?
I don't know for sure. A bunch of people came over, started standing around, and he stopped talking about it. So
it's probably over a year ago, but it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, right now, this is the issue, the illegal aliens. And so it's still ripe. It's still a ripe issue right now.
Right.
Because
exactly.
That's what's in the news. So we could bring this story up. But the thing is we can't do the story unless we have names, dates, times. We have to vet it. We have to make it right. We don't want our first story to have misinformation in it. That's the main thing.
No fake news.
That's right. Because they'll nail us to the wall so quick, just like that poor sheriff. He's trying to nail him for the wall, and he's doing the right thing, right?
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So thanks for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'll talk to you later. Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night. Okay. Next question is Gary from Illinois. How you doing, Gary?
Wonderful. I'd like to discuss that administrative law that was brought up earlier. It goes very deep. In fact, a case called Chevron versus NRDC in 1984 got into that topic, and it was a Chevron case. They called it Chevron deference. And what essentially ends up being is you've got two unelected agencies, the court and the various agencies, those alphabet agencies. And Congress, of course, sets them up, I believe it's by statute. Of course, if they don't put in the statute exactly what they're capable of doing, the court, when it goes to court, the court says, well, Congress delegated it to this organization. They're the ones that are knowledgeable, and we don't feel we can go against them. And so those unelected agencies, through court cases, and they always use that deference thing that, you know, if they say that's what we need to control, that aspect of whatever it may be, the EPA or whatever, that we really can't go against them.
They set them loose with no operating manual, no regulation. See, your regulations are your interpretation of the law. They're not the law, but they're the legislator's interpretation of the law for operating, just like for the administration of the law. Okay.
Right.
Now, when you go in and you want to fight something, it's much, you know, if you can fight it at the law level, you're better than going in and fighting it at the administration. Although there are remedies under the administration, you know, they set parameters, policies, procedures, and sometimes that's good enough on an internal thing, especially something like this prison thing. There may be something that would have avoided all this because there would have been policies and procedures in place that are clear so that if you ever brought it up to the court, they could say, well, they're following the book. They're following the regulations. And if the regulations are unconstitutional and they're not, you know, look, there's an enabling act on every law. So if they're sending it up and they're not setting the parameters, they're not giving them their clauses to operate under, that's pretty bad. You know what I mean? And then they're saying, we don't know what to do because we're not familiar and there's no clauses there. So we're going to let them do whatever they want. Like you said, they're not elected, and so they're doing whatever they want with no oversight from anybody, and then there's no redress at that point.
That's right. And the other problem you have is a president comes in, most of those people, and they can't fire him. When he comes into office, most have been appointed by a previous administration. And so he has very little effect if they really want to push against him.
Wait a minute. What do you mean? A president of the United States comes in?
Yes. the new president if...
No. He has administrative authority to run their policies and procedures or fire them. And if he can fire them, he can cut their funding, he can gag them. There's 100 things he could do to them. Believe me, president wants to... Huh?
The only thing that I see is Congress certainly can. They can give them specifics, first of all, on what their authority is. But the president really doesn't have much control over the people that are already there. He can't fire them. That's what I've been told. He can't fire them.
I don't believe that he can't fire them. But even if he truly can't fire them, I mean, what have they got, a lifetime appointment? You're talking about like an administrator of the BLM or something like that?
Right.
Of an ABC agency that the president can't fire him?
Right.
I believe you absolutely can, because it's administrative. It comes from his office, executive. He's the chief executive. How could you say the chief executive can't fire him? I mean, I know that a marshal is appointed, like, let's say, by the president, and he can't be fired. They can only be indicted. Now, and that's to give them a certain immunity. But I don't believe that kind of immunity goes to the head of an agency, of an ABC agency. And there is no reason for that. That would be ridiculous. So, and they're appointed for how long? For life? I never heard of such a thing, or for so many years. I think that that's something that they that's like the judges saying they vote themselves immunity. They rule we have immunity, and when they give themselves immunity, sounds to me like they're saying you can't fire us. It sounds like something that somebody in the Obama administration would do. I don't believe that they can't be fired by the president, and even if look at he's. He's the chief, it's an executive branch, and he's the chief executive, he's the chief officer. He can make policies and procedures, he can cut budgets, he can do all kinds of stuff. Congress can do it too, yeah. Congress maybe could get into more of the nitty-gritty of telling them what they're going to do, but when the president comes in and he makes a suggestion, I suggest you do this or you do that, and they don't do it, let me tell you what, he's got a whole bag of tricks he could use against them, including cutting their funding, probably. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. When it comes back to Congress, and if Congress doesn't act to do that.
Well, let me ask you something. How did the president get rid of the funding for Planned Parenthood? He just said no more. Done. It was finished. It was done with an executive order.
Then you get back to executive orders. They're not really legit either. It's Congress's authority.
No, it's not. It's not that executive orders aren't legit. Executive orders are absolutely legit when they deal with executive things in the executive branches. Executive orders can't affect me. He can't make rulings that he can come in and take my crops and all this other crap because I'm not part of that system. An executive order is an executive order to one of the agencies that he oversees, like the BLM and these. He absolutely has authority over them, complete. That's all those executive orders have authority over. They don't have authority over you, and they don't have authority over me. See, that's the fallacy where the president comes out and makes an executive order saying, we're going to do this, this, and that. He can't do that. They're holding it, and they're acting like he can. And then the proof of that is that Trump just came in and erased all Obama's executive orders, which shows you how powerful they are. They're not. They're powerful to the agencies that he has control over. That's his branch, the separate branches. That's the part that he runs. He's the chief executive, right?
Well,
he absolutely has control over them. Absolutely. If they're saying he doesn't, that's, look at Congress. Congress has to assemble, and they got to meet, and they got to have hearings. Think about it. You got ABC agencies. Yes, Congress does have the power to make policies and procedures or to discipline and do all this other stuff. But the executive, the chief executive, the president, who that falls right under his purview, he doesn't have to ask Congress. That's the whole idea. He's the boss. And so, if they don't like what if they don't like what the president did as he's administrating that executive office, maybe they can appeal it to Congress. I don't even know. But I don't think the president has to appeal to Congress to run the executive department. That's what they want us to believe, that he has to go to the judiciary, to Congress. That's a fallacy. And he could thumb their nose at them, because what kind of an executive is he? Just think of a corporation. What can the chief executive in a corporation do? He's pretty powerful. I mean, there's certain things he can't do, you know, because he's not an owner, you know what I mean? But he's the executive. He's making executive decisions, right?
Right.
So anyway, I believe there's a lot more power than you think there is there. I do believe that he can fire them. I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. I think, and if he can't fire them, I know that there's 100 other things he can do them. I know he can dry their funds up. Just look at what Donald Trump has done. If he didn't have the power to do it, he wouldn't be doing it. They would, the Democrats would be stopping him colder than a dead mackerel, you know? So, I think, you know, if there's a time to do it, the time is now. And if they're telling people, the president can't fire me, that's just misinformation so that they don't bring it to the president. Maybe, I don't know. You know what I mean? They use a lot of psyops on people to keep them in line. So I don't believe that he can't do something about it. So, and you know, there was a judge that just recently ruled, like last year, that all the administrative courts are unconstitutional. Did you know that?
Well,
that they're not lawful courts, and that they have no authority.
That's the problem. And it says the power of the agency is defined by and limited by the statute that creates it. If they don't identify what the agencies can do, then the agencies are considered the experts on the power they do or do not have.
And whose opinion wrote that?
That's in the Chevron versus the NRDC in 1984.
Right, so that was a Supreme Court decision, right?
Yes, it is.
That
is the type of a position they've taken ever since 1984, and that's why these agencies, like the BLM, they just run
Russia. Wait a minute, now stop. Now, Congress says that if the statute, now who makes the statute?
Congress.
They control Congress. So then Congress is going, if we put them out there with no statute, then they control themselves. What a round robin circular reasoning is that? They make the statute, but they can't rule on whether or not they're doing the right thing because we don't know what they're doing, because they're the experts, because we gave them a job and we didn't tell them how to do it. So however they're doing it, they know more than we know.
And that's exactly the attitude.
But that's wrong. It doesn't make sense. There's no common sense in it.
I know.
And it will not hold up. It will not hold up because it's ridiculous. And not only that, if Congress has that attitude, that's fine. But who's the head of every agency? It's an executive branch. It's the president. So he can come in and say, you know what? You're out of here. You're done. I'm closing your ass down. I'm telling you, he has the power to completely defund them, to completely fire them, and get rid of them, because he's the chief executive. He can say, I want you to all sit at your desk with a pencil. He got that woman in trouble for not carrying out his order. And she had to leave, remember?
Yeah, the attorney general.
Well, I think he has a little bit of control now, doesn't he?
Well, that's a different thing. See, they weren't established by Congress, the attorney general in that. Congress sets these up.
Well, that was the attorney general. You're right.
That is the problem. See, they set it up, and so, but they control nothing except the money. Now, the executive branch makes appointments to those committees, but that's about it. But that decision, you might want to read that, because it's used over and over again, and that's why they're running roughshod. Because
it's a bad decision. It's a bad decision.
It is. It is.
And if you go and shepherdize that, and you go look into LexisNexis or something, you might actually find a decision that trumps that, that shoots that down. They're great at taking decisions and running them through and saying that this is the law. And even if it's been shot down, they don't tell you that. Look, when I was in office, people would bring me all kinds of decisions. The law says this. And then you go and look and read the rest of it, and you find out that they only gave you half of it, or that it was superseded by such and such. And so it was not true. Just because the Supreme Court had a decision that said that in 84, was there a decision later on that trumped that? You know what I mean? That negated that.
I don't believe so, Gerard. This seems to be the base for all the cases. The court just remains silent. And is it legal? No. But the court says it is. Well,
the court is saying that they can't get involved in it. Now, are you saying Congress is saying they can't get involved, or is the court saying?
Well, Congress can certainly get involved. They can certainly get involved, and they haven't. But they should, and they should put limitations on the type of decisions these people come up with. But the opinion today is that they're the experts. That's why you appointed them. You created the EPA, to use an example. You didn't put any constraints on them, essentially, and I haven't read over all of those things, but that's the court's
Believe the president can get rid of any agency because he's the executive office. Look, remember when Reagan came in, he said, I'm going to get rid of the education department. And nobody said, you can't do that, did they? He didn't do it, but that was one of his campaign promises. I'm going to get rid of the education. Now, how can you promise that if you don't have the power to do that? If that was something that a president couldn't do, you certainly wouldn't want to make it a campaign promise, would you?
Well,
I'm telling you, I'm going to look into this. I mean, I don't want to beat this to death. But I think the president has broad powers over them, broad powers, because somebody has to. Look at you see the game that Congress played and the courts played with Congress? Well, they didn't tell them what to do, so they get to do what they want because they're the experts. Congress didn't say they were experts. Obviously, Congress better be the experts because they created them and they create the statute. So the court says, well, Congress didn't think that they needed to tell them what to do, so they've been doing what they're doing. So we're not going to second guess them because we're not experts. So they passed the ball, in other words, and they stuck it back at Congress. But what they didn't tell you is that guess what? What they should have said in that decision is either Congress needs to do it, like what Scalia would usually do on a case like that. He would say, look, we can't second guess them because Congress put them out there with no operating manual. But the executive branch could tell them what to do, or the executive branch could fire them. That should have been the rest of the story, like Paul Harvey's the rest of the story. That's what the court, if the court's going to instruct, the court should instruct. So what they did is they gave half the story. I'm telling you, you go ahead and look, and I'll bet you that. And who was going to do it? You think Obama would do it? And who was president in 1984 anyway?
Well, I tell you what, the dissenting opinion was written essentially by Scalia, and it had a lot to do with the president in power at that time. Okay.
So he probably jumped on the president and said, look, the president didn't do his job because the president can fix this.
No, that wasn't the case. But
I'm just guessing.
but anyway, it's a case that I think is important.
I have to read it. You can learn a lot.
Let's use Obamacare, okay? The president the president now said he was going to do away with it when he was running, okay? But it still goes through Congress. Congress has to vote on whether they're going to do away with it, whether they're going to appeal the whole thing or what they're going to do. And then they have to write the thing. The president can give that order, but it's up to Congress then to determine what they're going to do with it.
Right.
And he can have influence, of course, And of course,
well, he probably has a certain power to put something in that they have to vote on. In other words, he can bring something up to a vote, right? Right. And look, there's a game played there too, because the president has a veto power. So if they don't work together, then every time Congress brings something up and he vetoes it, and then it has to go back and he has to get a 2/3 vote, and it becomes a pushing match between the two of them. So I'm telling you, the president has a lot more power than he thinks he does over these agencies and over Congress, because there's a game being played there between the executive and the legislative branch. And there are certain strings I'm sure he can pull. And look at if those directors are having lifetime appointments, which I find that hard to believe. I find it hard to believe that the president can't change them or fire them at will. You know, that would be something that we need to change, because that would make them more powerful than the president, wouldn't it?
Well, essentially they are. I mean, they're running over everyone, you know, whether it be...
Yeah, well, I don't believe they are. I think they just have created the appearance that they are, because everything today is smoke and mirrors. And it's something that, you know, you brought up a good point, and I'm not that schooled in it, but everything in my fiber tells me that it's not, that it can't be that way, that it should not be that way, and that there's something askew here. You know, that he has more power than that. And what business does Congress have at instituting something with no directions? You know what I mean? That's like giving a kid the car keys and tell him here, and don't give him no driving lessons. Here, take the car, go drive it. And then you go, well, I don't know. Nobody told us how he was supposed to drive it, so we can't tell him when the cop pulls him over. Can't tell him what to do because he never got a book. Nobody told us to tell him how he should do it, right? It's just a ridiculous...
And I agree with you totally, and that's why I brought it up. I think it's totally out in left field, and I'd appreciate your comments if you have a chance to look at that case.
That's what we'll have to do. And actually, that's a good job for our investigative research team. How's that? I'm going to do like Trump does. I'm going to delegate it to somebody to get me the information on what is the power between Congress and the executive branch on these ABC agencies and the appointments of the czars that run them.
Yeah,
that's what they are.
Related to administrative law.
Right. As far as the administrative law.
Because that's,
well, that's good.
That's what we've been operating under really since 1984.
So we need to figure that out, and that's another thing that we can bring up to the forefront. There's another news story for News NLA. The average person probably doesn't know any of this stuff. I certainly don't know what the answer is, and I would like to know. And then once I know, we should put it out there so that if it's no good, we should bring light to it so that it'll change. That's what our job is, right?
Right.
There you go. Well, thank you. Thanks for that. Anything else?
No, thank you.
Yeah. Good discussion, by the way. Okay, with the next caller, there's no name, no state. It's the last four numbers are 0117, and you've been unmuted. Go ahead. Give me your name and your state, if you would.
Yeah, I'm Gerard. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, who's this?
This is Edward from Connecticut.
Okay, Edward, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm calling from another number, but I can't get through on my regular number, but that's for another time to discuss that. Listen, no, I'm glad you guys are talking about the situation that Trump is facing, because it's just like, imagine how we feel when we're facing things all the time, and then here the president is having a problem. So I think the timing is perfect for Trump to really get involved with the NLA, because he's having the problem with the court system. And that's the reason you started your organization, was because of the problems with the court system. So I just think the timing is incredible right now.
I feel the same way. That's what makes me very excited. That's why I don't sleep at night anymore. You know,
this is like an extra push here, like especially with the possible connections you might have, being that Trump is from New York and you guys, you know, the founders are from New York, so
yeah,
hopefully yeah. Something can come together.
I do remember when Ronald Reagan was president, and he would want to do something, and he'd get on the television, and he'd complain about Congress. He'd go, I'm trying to get them to do this or that. And boy, the people would get mad, and then they would do it. You remember that? How he used to come on and complain about Congress, and the next thing you knew, Congress was doing it because all those phones started jumping off the hooks, and that's what they understand. When those phones jump off the hooks, that's when Congress moves, because those are votes, and that's all they understood, right? I mean, I don't know if it's still that way, but back then, every phone call that came in, every letter, you know, that's what moved them. You know, and if nothing came in, they didn't. You didn't get any results. And so Reagan knew that he had a very high approval rating at the time. And so when he went on and complained and said, "I can't get it done because the Congress and the Senate aren't cooperating," boy, he got cooperations on numerous occasions by doing that. And Donald Trump can do the same thing right now because his approval rating is very high, and that's why he's moving so fast. And that's why it's up to us when something like that comes in that you do get on the phones and you do call your senator and you do call your congressman, because it might actually make a difference right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I tell you, Gerard, and I agree 100% with that, because I think Trump is going to redefine the office, and he is definitely going to go to the people. Obviously, he's more technically advanced than, of course, Reagan ever was. Because of the technology also. But, of course, Trump being the businessman he is, you know, he's really into all that. So, you know, he's already doing, you know, with Twitter already to get to so many
right.
people. But imagine he could go right, you know, he does have the bully pulpit right now. He could go right to the people. And I think that's what he's going to do. If he has any problems whatsoever on some good things that he's going to push forward, he'll go directly. And then... he'll get the people so riled up that they'll threaten to impeach these congressmen and senators that are getting in the way of our progress. And,
right.
just in conclusion, I think once the momentum starts shifting and they start seeing Trump make some progress, I think people are going to, it's just going to snowball and, you know, on a positive thing. We just need a little bit of time. But I just think within 6 months or a year, people are really going to look at Trump completely different, because they're going to see some action.
Well, there's a lot of... No, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, I just want to say, you just whatever you guys could do to get, you know, just to get involved with Trump's people, and, you know, and maybe I think he would look at NLA so much more, you know, positively because of the immediate problems that he's having. Actually, NLA can help him.
Well, he definitely needs us, just like that sheriff needs his people. It's the same thing. Look, we need to do the bottom up, top down, bottom up thing that the communist Van Jones was pushing. We need to use their tactics. Their tactics are now our tactics. Donald Trump is bringing the top down to us. We need to bring the bottom up to him, and that's what this is all about. And the other thing I wanted to say on this subject before we move on is I think that Ronald Reagan was more controllable than Donald Trump. I think Ronald Reagan, being that he went through Hollywood, they had more on him to control him. Donald Trump is more of a choir boy, and he went to a military school, and they got nothing on him, because if they had it on him, they would have used it already. So
right.
I think he's safe from that part of it anyway. You know what I mean? And the other wrinkle that we haven't talked about is many, many, many of these 450, whatever, three, four congressmen and senators that we have been compromised, and Trump has the goods on all of them, and you're going to start seeing arrests. You're probably going to see half of them cleared out, because they're going to be arrested and they're going to be indicted, is what I believe. Because they're all, no, I shouldn't say they're all, but many, many of them are no good, and he has the goods on them, and he's just biding his time. When the time comes and they start indicting these guys for the stuff that they've done, they're nasty, evil creatures, most of them. So he's going to end up with even more congressmen on his side. You know what I mean? As they get indicted and they have to be, they got to be, you know, new ones got to be put in. So that's another wrinkle, perhaps. You know what I mean?
Exactly, and that's where you'll start seeing the momentum shifting. You know, with them too. They'll start. I mean, this election was so historic in so many ways. Imagine someone winning without even having their party back them. It's unbelievable that this could happen. And then one thing that the talking heads never mentioned, the parallel between Thomas Dewey and Harry Truman, where Dewey went before the American people as a nominee for president, and he said, I am here without help from anyone except for the people. And they didn't want the people to know that was a parallel, because Trump was the same way. He was there without any help from any of these special interests. And they were afraid of Dewey, just like they're afraid of Trump, but they were successful with Dewey. The powers that be did not want Dewey, because he was going to clean up the swamp, so to speak, even though they didn't use the term back then. But, and that's the thing, the powers that be, they won at that time. But Trump, somehow, by a miracle, they weren't able to stop him. And go ahead, Gerard.
I think the reason they couldn't stop him is because he's been moving and shaking in their world with their people, using their system for so long, and he had so much knowledge and maybe even dirt on them that they just couldn't do it.
Yeah, where Dewey at that time, you know, no one ever tried to buck the system like him. But he was, from what I understand, a very tough district attorney in his time. And then he moved his way up, and he was the nominee for president in 1948. So if you look that up, you'll see he was there without any help. And he was really predicted to win, because he was more accomplished than Truman. Remember, Truman was just a men's clothing store salesman that became a senator in a small state, and Roosevelt just put him on his last year, just for someone that, just to have on the ticket. And remember the story about Truman, they said he never was allowed to go through the front door until one morning they woke him up and brought him through the front door. He didn't know what was happening. They said, you're the president now, because that's where Roosevelt died. But anyway, a great talking to you as usual. And of course, hopefully John's listening there.
Okay. Yeah, good questions. Okay, we'll
Thank
move
you.
To the next call.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Ed. Yeah. Okay, next caller, wireless caller, no name, 0184.
Hello?
Yes. Who's this?
This is Sammy Joe, Flathead County, Montana.
How you doing, Sammy Joe?
I'm not doing too bad. I was poking around the website last week and noticed that a gentleman up in my county had registered us for having a committee of safety. And I'm one of the county organizers, and I was wondering if I could get some help networking me with this gentleman so that we can work more as a team to maybe get a more activity and more membership in our area.
Well, do you know who he is? Did you talk to him?
I tried calling his phone number, but he didn't answer.
Oh. I mean, I don't know if we have more information than you. I mean, like, if you called Jan, he would be able to go on the site and look if you don't, and check the number.
Yeah.
I mean, Gerard, Jan already looked, and they were supposed to contact her.
Right. I'll go ahead and get a hold of him again. I know exactly who Sammy's talking about, and I'll have them call her instead. So I've got your number too, Sammy, so I'll take care of that in the morning.
That would be awesome. And if I don't answer, I do have voicemail, and I do check it.
Okay, good. Good.
Okay.
Good.
Well, thank you. That's all I had. I just need a little help getting it going up here.
Look at this call is working like it's supposed to. That's one of the things we do here. we do everything, and that's one of the things that you do. You go, hey, I can't get a hold of somebody. Everybody's here. This is the time to do it. Okay, so thank you for that, Sammy.
Well, thank you for what you do, and I love the calls. It's fascinating. I usually just sit with it on mute and hang out, but I needed help. So, well, I'll let you go to the next caller. Thank you.
Well, I hope I was able to help you. Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Yeah. And the next caller is my buddy, Harley from Vermont. How you doing, Harley?
Hey, buddy. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Glad I got on.
I'm always going to call. You're the guy I'm always going to call, and I never get the time to. It seems like got to call Harley, and I never do. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I want to make people aware of this. I mean, this falls right into evil people who want to take your guns, fake news, people being abused in the court. And this guy's case, Jonathan Reich. I'm going to read this thing from his father, who's an accountant. And this gentleman's been working on the Sandy Hook truth stuff since, years. And at any rate, he's been thrown into Rikers. According to Jonathan's attorney, Governor Malloy's warrant is sitting on Governor Cuomo's desk. Now, this was on the 10th, so to be signed. People have been calling both Governor Cuomo and District Attorney Brown to state that there is government corruption in Connecticut and that the Connecticut authorities are trying to draw Governor Cuomo into their corrupt scheme. Mention that Jonathan has been held in Rikers Island for over 80 days on a Connecticut misdemeanor charge from 2013 and that the arrest warrant was full of lies and that the court documents have been tampered with. Jonathan's civil rights have been violated and that the U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara's office is investigating the case. You can also say that federal civil rights lawsuit is being prepared and will be filed shortly. Thanks for your help, David. Now, the issue here is that, he's like a internet ninja, and he's been working on these things, and they took down site after site. There is one that's still up. Some of the stuff I had to find in the internet time machine.
Right,
but
way
if
back.
You look at HartfordCommunityCourt.com, there's some of the current stuff there, and I don't know necessarily how to help this guy other than make calls right now. It's
You just did, though.
It's well advanced, but it's being hidden, and it's these court judges and things that are covering each other's butts, and they're trying to, they've extradited him from Connecticut over to New York.
That's weird. Hey, Preet is a tough guy. I know. I've seen some of the stuff he's done. So that's encouraging. The other thing is Ollie's coming up next. We're going to talk to Ollie, but I hope Ollie's taking notes because this is all current events on the news story to get this news out. You see, that's the trick. If we can get this stuff on our news channel and other people are pick it up.
As a matter of fact, in terms of getting things out, I want to talk to people now about social media.
Yeah,
I'm big time on Facebook, and one of the things I've been doing is encoding some of our better Wednesdays and Monday nights. Everybody can find me at William Blake. And if you're in L.A., you say you're in L.A., I immediately accept you as a friend. But what's nice is I've got these in a format that's easily shared. They've got a little poster there. It sits and plays right in the window. The poster, shows you that you're still with it,
Right.
There's three-hour pieces, and there's one- or two-hour pieces. There's your rant on the Committee of Safety. And you just go to my Facebook, William Blake, and pull down videos, and you'll see them right in there. Real easy to find, real easy to share, okay?
Cool.
That's for everybody.
I like that. Yeah,
and so on top of that, and internationally now, we've got cases going on in UK, Australia, and here in the U.S. that are matching up almost, okay? And they're same usual suspects, the Mossad, the IDF, if you know what I mean, usual suspects. Mm-hmm. We got John Patterson in the U.K. Look him up on Google, just 5 seconds. You'll come up with a ton of stuff. You've got Brendan O'Connell in Australia. Actually, he's been going from Iran to now he's in Malaysia. He's trying to put together a conference on these things because the IDF spying and the Israeli work that they're doing is just so crazy. It's just it's treasonous, and it's got to be slowed down and looked at. And then you've got Sibel Edmonds, and she's with Newsbud. And she's been very cagey because she's the most gagged woman ever in U.S. history. She's Turkish, excellent reporter. They do extremely tight professional work. Sibel Edmonds. And the stuff that she has challenged people on and the abuse that that woman went through and all of these things seem to be lining up at the same time.
Hey, I wonder if she'll allow us to repost her stuff on our channel.
Absolutely. You know, I bet you she would.
We could do stories on her. And the thing is you just want to do a little blurb, a two-minute thing to get, like you said, just give a real good story and then give the website so people can go in and Google it and get the rest of the story. See, that's the job. That's what our job is to get people that news in a couple of minutes, a couple seconds, like almost like tweeting. I don't want to say tweeting, but
give me the breadcrumb.
Yeah,
just let me go do my own research. Give me good breadcrumbs. Yeah.
Yeah, and see, my vision is to get people to come to us to get that kind of news. Say, yeah, they got all the good stuff over there. That's what we want. You know? So thank you for that.
I really encourage those people out in Buffalo to get with that sheriff as soon as possible.
Yeah, we got to get a committee of safety going, and we do have good people up there. So the phones have got to start ringing tomorrow. I know two people that I'm going to call directly myself from out there and see if I can't help get the ball rolling. But anybody else that has any knowledge or knows anybody there, you know, they need to feel free to do that.
I also want to offer you, John, and everybody my help. I'm right here in Albany at the moment, and I could even, you know, transport things, but I want to work on like maybe a New England area committees of safety support group, you know, so we can get some of our committees of safety off the ground and start our correspondences and things because we're physically, geographically close. So I'm right near that Capital District, you know, corner. I'm going back to Vermont very soon as well to fight for my land, but right now, you know, politically and everything else, it seems like working for the group interest is almost one's own personal interest, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you and I at least should get together for the committees of safety up here. We're practically neighbors. Look, I'm only 30 miles from Albany.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we should be collaborating. And look, you know the Shoemaker's kids? That's what my county is. I've neglected my county because I've been so busy doing this stuff. I need people to get the committees of safety going here. I need to get them on it. Let's get them going, just like you do. I mean, this is important. And
Connecticut needs a lot of help. We know that they've had their sheriffs ripped away from them, and it's got to be restored somehow. There's the gal down there, Crystal. I think she does fabulous work, soft spoken, but man, we need to leverage our experts.
Yeah, she's good. And you know what? Isn't it ironic that Connecticut is the Constitution State?
Yeah.
It's like the Constitution State. What a bad example they set. We got to fix them. Hey, we almost should fix them before we fix New York, the Empire State. But anyway, it's a race between Connecticut and New York. I don't know. You know, everybody thinks their state is the worst, but at least we have sheriffs over here. But okay.
Well, I yield and get whoever else in the queue you can get.
Thank you. Colorado Ollie, go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, our official channel name is NLA News Source. You can Google that, or you can go into YouTube and search for NLA News Source. Now, I've got a new email addie for that channel. It is nla-news@nlaco.co. nla-news@nlaco.co. Now, if you want to send me something, send me a link to for vetting, send me links to videos, send me photographs, and just give me all the information, and we'll see what we can do with it. But anyway, when you go on that channel, subscribe to it. And one thing that really makes a YouTube channel grow, any video you watch, throw a like on it. You get a bunch of likes on a video, and it goes up into the higher in the search engine. Okay, that's yeah. About all I got.
Okay, thank you. So like and subscribe, guys. You hear that? Let's help get this channel off the ground. It's really important, and we're at the beginning now. So let's go off with a pretty good bang. We got an awful lot of information here tonight for ideas and things that we will be trying to put on that channel. I'm sure. Thank you, Ollie. I'm going to go to Raymond. Raymond, I don't know what state you're from, but go ahead.
Hi.
Raymond. Yeah.
I wanted to comment on Gary Wills. Statements. He's right on, you know, and I'm from Chicago, Illinois. Uh-huh. And we have people that aren't even judges that are making decisions against us. And
right.
I mean, it's like crazy. I mean, how can you have a person that's not even a judge finding you?
Well, it's what we've allowed to happen, I guess. You know, we've reaping what we sowed. I guess we let them get away with too much. You know, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's not right, but it happens. And why does it happen? It happens, you know. Oh well, it's all administrative. You know that, right? It's all administrative, which is not really law, so to speak. You know, and look at administrative. You have to challenge it. That's how. What happens is, they get you because you contract into it. This is and look at. I'll tell you one thing. I know somebody who just went through the State Trooper Academy here in New York. And they taught them, when you walk up to the car, you're contracting with the people. Why are they telling their troopers that? You got any idea? Because the word is out, I guess, right? In other words, they're teaching them how to get you to get into some kind of an adhesion contract by your words, even, right? I mean, when you hand him your license, you're contracting in a certain sense, because what you're doing is you're saying, I'm driving commercially. Now, I'm not telling you to fight with the cop on the side of the road, but you know what? We need to train ourselves to have, you know, to speak in a certain way. You know, I mean, they'll ask you, are you an attorney? You know what I mean? If you know what you're talking about, because that's the only thing they're afraid of is attorneys. I don't know if you know that. Cops are, you know, if he's smart, he's afraid. You know, if he's just a yahoo, they don't care. They want to beat anybody up like they beat Mumford up. But generally speaking, an attorney is the only guy that a police officer might fear because he knows that they can sue him and do all kinds of things. So, but, you know, when they ask you for your license, you say, well, I'm not driving commercially. And if you got something on, you know, I'm riding, I'm not driving, you go through that whole thing and say, and you know, well, you got to give me a license. okay, but I'm doing it under duress, and I do not wish to contract with you. That's all you need to say is, I do not wish to contract with you. Give me your license. Okay, but I'm doing it under duress. I'm not driving commercially here. I only have this license for driving commercially. You see, because then when you go to court, and especially if you're taping it, if you got a dash cam and you're taping that conversation, when it finally does get up to a court that can actually rule on it, which would be the Supreme Court, because the state can't be the injured party, the state can't give you remedy on it. It has to go to a federal court. That's why they're getting away with it, because who wants to go to a federal court? Nobody wants to do it, but technically, that's where your remedy is. You're not going to get it in a state court. So if you don't contract with them and you document everything, yeah, you could beat them. But who's got time to argue about a $100 traffic ticket? You're going to spend $6 million to make a point. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, the other issue is, say I have a concealed carry and an officer pulls me over where I have to put my hands on the steering wheel and oblige him to predominantly get out of the car and show him where my firearm is. And
no, you don't. Who told you that? I never tell them I got a concealed carry. I never tell them I got a gun in my pocket either.
Well,
there's
they know it by my license plate.
Why, your license plate said I'm a concealed carry?
With the state of Illinois, it does.
Oh, see, well, that's just going to happen here, you know, by now. But the state, if they know it by your license plate, then why do you have to tell them? Does your state have a law that says that you got to reveal that you got a concealed carry and that you got a gun on you where it is? Look, if you got a concealed carry, if a cop knows you got a concealed carry, he pulls you over, your license plate says you're a concealed carry, he's got to assume, he should ask you, do you have your gun on you? And then you say yes or no, right? There's no reason for you to tell him. He should just assume that, yeah, it's on and it's loaded. That's it. There's no reason. And the fact that you have a concealed carry, you know what that means? I would tell him, that means I'm a law-abiding citizen, officer. Go pick on somebody else. I've been thoroughly vetted. And I got a concealed carry. That's what that concealed carry means. I've been thoroughly vetted. Am I a suspect in a crime? Do I look like the description of somebody you're looking for? And am I free to go? Thank you, officer. Thank you for protecting and serving me this day. Am I free to go? That's what you need to do.
But unfortunately, he's going to tell me step out of the car very slowly.
And you would say, am I a suspect in a crime? No. What's his probable cause? He cannot have you step out of the car because you have a concealed carry. That's a violation of your rights. You don't have to step out of the car because you have a concealed carry. Am I a suspect in a crime? Am I under arrest? Well, no. Well, step out of the car. Well, then I don't wish to step out of the car, your officer. If I'm not a suspect, am I free to go? What, you know? Do you have probable cause? Where's your supervisor, officer? Please, can you call a supervisor? Because I don't think you know the law. I don't want this to escalate, officer, and I do not wish to get out of the car. So unless you're going to arrest me and put handcuffs on me and charge me with some kind of crime, I suggest you let me go. He's in trouble right there. And you should be taping it. And if you got a witness in the car, that's good too. But everybody should have a dash cam. It seems like everybody in Russia drives a gas cam. You ever go on YouTube and go on Russian video? They got all kinds of great crashes and stuff. What do you think they all got dash cams for? Because they like to catch crashes on the highway? No, they got dash cams because they've been fighting an egregious police force all their lives. And they probably beat them with the dash cam. It's the only reason they have them, because they're finally getting some law and order over there. Because they're sick of the crap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you do not have to put your hands on the steering wheel, and you do not have to get out. And he's got to tell you the charges, and he has to have probable cause. And that's a fact. I don't care what state you're in. You know.
Well, I work nights and I test cell phone towers, and they have me go to various places in the middle of nowhere, and a lot of times people call the police on me.
Well, the reason you have a concealed carry is because you work nights and you go to all these crazy places in the middle of the night. You need a concealed carry.
Exactly.
So there you go. And when they call the police on you and it comes up on your license that you have a concealed carry, number one, he knows you've been vetted. That's number one. That's what I would tell him. And number two, you say, recognize my name and my face so that next time you know who I am and you don't want me to get out of the car for any stupid reason. You know? My goodness, you're working. That's even more reason. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm calling the dispatcher on top of it. I'm doing 911 testing.
You're doing 911 testing? Is that what you said?
Yes.
Oh, well, that should be easy. Call 911 and say, could you tell this officer I'm testing the 911 and please let me go?
Yeah.
But, you know, you look at, use your imagination. You get the idea where I'm going with this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That if you know your rights, knowledge is power, and if you're respectful and you know how to talk and you sound intelligent and you do all these things, 9 times out of 10, the officer is not going to bother you. If somebody called on you because they saw a suspicious car and he showed up, first of all, he's not just an officer looking for trouble. You already know that. Somebody called. He had a complaint. He has no choice but to check it out. So he's not there looking just because he's looking for trouble. He has probable cause. Somebody called on you, right? So
right.
Once he finds out that you're in the process of doing a job and that you do have a concealed carry and you're so-and-so and you're working on this and that, you should have no trouble going away. And after a couple of those calls in an area, I mean, I don't know if you always work the same area or the same.
No, I'm somewhere different all the time. And some aren't as nice as others are.
Yeah, that's true. I understand that. But you get the idea. And, you know, maybe you go through an area, you know, I don't know how what your radius is. But, you know, after a while, they should get to know who you are. And maybe you should put some other kind of signs on the card that they know. Or if you're going to go in an area, you might want to call them ahead of time and say, look, I'm coming in here. If you get any calls, it's me. You know, that type of stuff. Do a little proactive stuff to save you. Because, you got to feel for the cops, too. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
In other words, I'm not, you know, they're out there, and if they're stopping you because somebody called, they are protecting and serving. They don't know who they're coming up against, and they have a complaint, so they're operating with a reason, right?
Most are good.
That's what you're going to find. Most are good. That's what I find.
Most are good, but there are occasional ones that are
not. Yeah, you get the yahoos. You get the guys that are all pumped up on everything. But, you know,
the
ones that I know are pretty good. I know you can get to know them in your local area, and usually they get to know your face and your name, and then they're pretty good because they don't want to mess with their neighbors, you know. But if you're out in an area or in a big area where nobody knows anybody, then you got to do like I said. You got to be very professional, and you got to say the right thing and do the right thing. And even the yahoos, if you conduct yourself right, they won't want to mess with you because they don't know if you're an attorney or what's going on, and they know that you're trouble because you know the law, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
There was my, you should really listen to Gary Will. He knows what's going on in the area.
Right. Well, I still don't know about this administrative law. I would like somebody to look up that business on the president there, you know?
Yeah.
But,
anyway. Well, that's totally it.
Yeah.
Watched the law for a long time.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. I gotta go. We gotta hurry because we only got a couple minutes and I wanna get Rhonda in there from Washington. We're a little bit over, but I'll go ahead and take.
Hi, okay. I just wanted to give are you there?
Yes, I am. Go ahead, Rhonda.
Okay. I just wanted to give you a little bit of information for everyone. Chris Ann Hall has two very excellent broadcasts out right now. One on the actual invention or application originally of slavery in this country. And the second one is The Power of the Presidency, which just came up. So those are two videos that everybody needs to watch.
Now they're on her website, obviously.
Correct.
Now, I think you could go to YouTube, though, and probably search it.
Oh, if you go to YouTube, you'll get all of her stuff, and usually the latest
right.
comes up first.
Right. So you could go into, like, let's say YouTube and go, Chrisanne Hall, Power of the Presidency. I bet you it pops right up, right?
Oh, I would bet it does, yeah. That is right. So new, I haven't even watched it yet.
Well, I'm going to go watch it now that you did that. I thank you. See, there's...
Oh, you're welcome.
That's half my research done, finding a video on it. And Chrisanne Hall is pretty dang good, you know?
Yep.
Oh, thank you very
you're
much.
You're welcome.
Uh-huh. Okay, we got one more, and then if we're done, we're going to go. Thank you, Rhonda. I appreciate that. I do. Missouri Kelly, go ahead.
Hey, Gerard.
Yes.
This is Jefferson in Southwest Missouri.
How you doing, Jefferson?
Hey, man, I was just wondering if anybody had picked up on the Trump meeting with the sheriffs about 13, you know, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I wasn't very happy with that one.
Okay, I was just wanting to kind of get the feel and the sentiment because that is proof in the pudding. He either doesn't know what due process is, because as you notice, the sheriffs themselves were sneaking around. They never mentioned due process. They said, "Oh, he's trying to curtail," or right?
Yeah.
Okay. So same old.
Yeah.
But he's shaking his head, you know, like a bobblehead over here, and then he makes the crack about the senator that was putting up the legislation to get due process, you know, before they could take the land, right? So right. I wonder if anybody was catching on to that, because the sheriffs, they'll bow down to him, so we don't have to convince 3,000 sheriffs. We just have to convince one man.
That's
what,
right.
What due process is. That's it.
Yep, yep.
And you guys already got the ball rolling. So right there, there's the video right there that you can refer back to and say, see here what these sheriffs are doing? They're leading you down the primrose path, pal. They're lying to you.
Right. We should find out who the sheriffs were.
Well, one was Evenson. The one from Texas was the biggest turd in the bowl. But he's one. But we need
right.
to find
that's
out who that senator, who those senator. He, they didn't name the senator, but we need to find out who that is and give them a pat on the back and some support. You know, they're trying to put a bill in to stop these guys, and we need to help them.
Yeah, no, you're right, and I'm glad you brought that up. But we've been discussing that, and some other people brought it up, and. That's an area that he needs to be educated or re-educated or something on. And, you know,
I thought
would be proof in the pudding, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's right there. It's right there in front of him. He was there. He was live at the meeting. They were there. So, you know, it's like, here, we'll just let me show you where due process lies and how far that if he's listened to bar snakes for decades, that how far he's gone away from it. Like you said, it's just a nudge. It's just a nudge. It's two words, due process. That's it.
Right, exactly. And he's been in that statutory world a long time, Donald Trump, with his buildings and all that other belongings. So he's not
right.
perfect.
I just want to make sure you guys we're looking at that under the microscope, because I know there's a lot there.
No, we are, and that's absolutely true. And I think Gary Franchi ran a video on it too.
Okay. I just wanted to touch base with you, Gerard, and let you know that
calls on that. I think he got called out on that. I haven't heard anything recently, but we will follow up on that, and I appreciate that. Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch base. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Okay, with that, we're going to end. We're a little over. Thank you, everybody, and we'll see you here next week, same time, same station. Appreciate it.